Joint Special Committee on Land Use Fairness to order. What we're going to do tonight is we're going to be opening up a public hearing. I'm going to do that right now, then we'll go into some other provisions and discussions. I'm opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 588, House Bill 3540, House Bill 3153, and Senate Bill 1019. So we're opening a public hearing on all four of those bills. Need to maybe give a little historical. I know many of the people that have been here are here tonight have been here in the past. You've been here to give them testimony on different issues that we've had before us, starting in the early days of the session of just the frame or just the discussion on Measure 37. Then there were certain bills that came before us that we asked for public testimony on that. This last Thursday night, we had representatives at our request, the co-chairs, to come in and go through what had been worked on as what has been loosely defined as a framework for a better Measure 37 that had taken place over a period of time with a subgroup of this committee. That work group start meeting on February 23rd, and the last meeting we had together was April 4th. There were 14 meetings that that subgroup, that was a work group, conducted, and prior to that and simultaneous to that, we also had continued meetings that were at the committee level, which started on January 23rd and continued into, I guess it was into March of this year. Then we took a recess as we worked through some of those issues. This last Thursday, as I mentioned, we asked for a review of the framework. The framework was distinguished as to showing what the difference of opinions were at the time when there was an impasse that was reached within the work group, and we attempted to put on the record at that time, and I believe the record speaks for itself as to saying where there was differences. What we will be doing tonight and what we said last Thursday is we will be taking public testimony on the framework. There have been different pages that have been handed out from different perspectives of the issue as to the framework. So when you are called to give testimony tonight, there's a couple things that we need to ask you to do. One, limit your testimony to the framework. Remember, we've had a lot of testimony already on whether Measure 37 is good or bad, no matter what your position is on Measure 37. We've also had testimony on different bills such as Senate Bill 505. We're not here tonight to get testimony on that, but what we want to talk about and what we want to hear from you is regarding the framework that has been proposed and has been was discussed in this last Thursday. I will tell you that I have seen some correspondence that have come around talking about amendments that are floating around. There are no amendments at this point. We, the co-chairs, have asked for amendments to be drafted. I was told on the way down after 5 p.m. today that some of those amendments may be drafted and have been completed, but we have not even seen them. The goal tonight is to take public testimony. This coming Thursday, which will be our next scheduled meeting, we will have a work session. The purpose for that work session is for these 10 individuals, including myself and our committee administrator, to work through the issues as we best know them today and what the differences are, and there may be some discussions as to how we may be able to work through that. And then the anticipation is that either we, if we feel comfortable for Thursday night of this week, to make amendments to one or more of the bills that we have before us, or wait until next Tuesday, a week from tonight, and take that on. So you're more than welcome. It will be a public process, and you will be more than welcome to be here this coming Thursday if you want to observe the dialogue, the discussion that we have as a committee. Mr. Co-Chair.
No, I think that covers it very well.
So with that, what we're going to do is, if you, for those who have been tracking and following what we've been doing over this period of time, and I should mention, I know that there's other request, draft requests for different amendments, so there's probably going to be a lot of stuff for Thursday for us to look at.
We have a question here from Vice Chair.
I just wanted to make a comment, Mr. Chair, that the framework as presented does not reflect agreements of the two Republican House members.
The framework that we had on Thursday did not, and that's why we went to the endeavor of making certain that where there was differences from where we had worked up until the point of the impasse, that it was noted on the record. Anyone who is concerned as to what those are, I'd ask you to look at the record that is videotaped, that is that you can get off the audio. and off the internet, and you will hear and see as to the presentation that was given as to noting where there were differences. And that is the part that we're talking about, and we'll probably continue to hear more about the differences as we get into our work session this coming Thursday. So what I wanted to say is that when we started our testimony at the beginning of session, we had different groups that were representing different organizations and stakeholders that came forward as invited testimony. We will be doing some of that tonight to make certain that we get those perspectives, since those individuals do represent, in some sense, a broader perspective of many individuals that are in this room, and not just one individual that was speaking on their own behalf. Clearly, we will be taking public testimony from individuals as well, but we're going to try to mix that up a little bit. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess from my perspective, and perhaps the Republicans on the Senate side, the source of information we got on the discussions that were going on the workforce was from information that leaked out from the House Republicans, and I felt like last Thursday's meeting was a dramatic difference from that situation. And follow-up conversations, I think that's true. In fact, the differences that were discussed were far from what was described to me. And as I go through this proposal, and as I went through the situation that we've had on Thursday, the vagueness of what people are going to be testifying tonight makes me very nervous, because I could list you a dozen reasons why this proposal is so troublesome. But just the change in the appraisal process could, in essence, gut Measure 37 and eliminate it permanently, and it depends on how it's drafted. And if a person got up here today trying to testify that this proposal basically got eliminated and revoked Measure 37, I suppose a person could make that argument just based on that one point alone. And I guess what's difficult is, I would say, if the public is going to be testifying tonight in a way that I don't see there is any way that they can actually testify on what we're going to be voting on in the future, because this proposal is so vague, and until we have amendments, when I look at this, having been in land use for now more than a decade and a half, this right here is so far from any kind of amendments that it's almost impossible for folks to testify. And we're going to get such varying degrees of testimony and what this impact of this proposal is, that I'm not sure we're getting a fair representation of public testimony. And
well, I guess we'll have to wait and see what type of testimony we actually get, and then we can assess whether or not we got a fair assessment of the testimony as to how it pertains to what we'll be dealing with when we get into these areas, including the amendments that I would suspect and expect that are being drafted on your behalf that we haven't seen yet either. So why don't we do this? Why don't we go ahead and get moving? Because we got a lot of people here. I know we got a number of rooms that are being used tonight. It's 5:15. We're going to attempt to get as many people in as we can. And just a couple more frameworks. One thing I didn't ask you to do, if you have a cell phone, if you can please turn it off and realize that we have a system here that is antiquated, and sometimes it interferes with what's being recorded and what could impact what's being done over the internet. The other thing is that we're going to be limiting testimony to about 2 minutes because we have a number of people, and we want to get as many people as we can before us to get whatever comments they want to make regarding the proposed framework as it's been laid out at this point. And
real quickly, though, is this framework is from the chairs?
The framework is a product of both, not only from the chairs, but also includes portions of what the work group had worked on, and many parts of the framework has not been changed from where we were through that work group. But there are certain parts that have been, and as I stated before, I believe that the record clearly demonstrates where there was a change, and we had Mr. Whitman from the Department of Justice, the attorney who was assisting us on the drafting when we gave him the instructions of what needed to be drafted to establish what were the differences between what the work group had worked on as well as what was being, included in the final presentation that occurred on Thursday.
I just want to say, from our perspective, we haven't been updated by the chairs on this issue, and the information we have is that there was not that agreement. So just so you understand where we come from, is that this looks like a proposal from the chairs,
well,
and not from a proposal of the work group. And I just want to make sure that that's on the record, that I don't want to say that what happened last Thursday night was a reflection of any kind of work group, because that's not the understanding. And And from the press release put out by the House Republicans, I don't think that they thought that was either. So I just want to make sure that we have it defined. If we're going to talk about a framework, it's a framework being proposed by the chairs.
Well, I understand your position, and that's fine. It's recorded. But I also will tell you that the framework that we put out last Thursday did, in fact, include many of the components that the work group that included House Republicans was in there. Now, we will allow the record to stand for itself, speak for itself, and we'll allow these individuals who've come here tonight to give us public testimony to give us public testimony.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you. Well, I guess I'd just like to put my comments on the record, too, because from my perspective, the Senate Republicans have not been heard in this issue. And, you know, it seems like the only opportunity we're going to get is in front of public testimony in this forum. So I feel I have to take that opportunity now. I appreciate the input the House Republicans put in on the issue, and they did a good job. But from my understanding, what I saw, what I heard Thursday, nowhere reflected what I had been led to believe was the discussion and the almost agreement that had been reached in this work group. And yes, and I have too offered amendments, and it would be nice, be appreciated by private legislative council in addition to me, if I knew which bills. I know there are four bills listed, and because there are four bills listed, we're having amendments drafted for four bills. If we would be given an indication from the chairs what bills would be moving, legislative council work would be a lot lessened because they wouldn't have to draft in exact same amendments for four different bills. We could maybe refine the system, because I've had a request down there now for, well, since before the framework was announced, my proposal went out the week before that, and they are obviously working on the chair's framework and other, I'm assuming, other amendments from other members. So we could lighten the load by there if the chairs would define which bills they intend to be working, so we can do that. But, you know, my perspective is the House Republicans, I appreciate the work they did, but the Senate Republicans' voice has not been heard in this. And I just think it's important that people know that from what I was led to believe, this framework did not reflect what was being talked about in that work group.
And, you know, not being in the conversations of where you got your information as to what was discussed at the work group, I fully appreciate the dilemma you find yourself in as to what you were told. And that's just, you know, I guess that's the difference of perspective as to what was or wasn't agreed to during that work. And, again, we'll allow the individuals who want to give testimony today to do so. I do want to thank everyone that the individuals that did participate in the work group. I believe that it did, in fact, help us refine the issues that were before us at the time, that we worked through many of those issues and actually did, in fact, come to agreement on multiple of those issues. And it's very easy to look at the side-by-sides that have been one that I just received from Representative Garrard and Representative Smith, and doing a comparison as to what the co-chairs have put out, and it appears to me that when you look at them, there's a lot of similarities, and actually in many cases are actually the same, but there are some differences. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and take some testimony at this point.
Mr. Chair.
And Senator,
I'd like to make a comment.
Representative.
If I could,
sure.
Please. I wasn't here last Thursday night, and I listened to it over the internet, and I was struck by how different the framework was. And so I think that's what you're hearing is parts of those were the same, but one word can make a huge difference. So, yes, some of those, and we met numerous times. I was amazed to hear you say 14 times, but it's not from lack of trying, that's for sure. And I just want to put it on the record that that framework does not reflect what we agreed upon or didn't agree upon.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate, Representative Smith, your position as to whether there's been changes. It sounds to me, based on your comments, that there actually were areas that were in agreement, but there were some areas that weren't.
Yes.
And clearly, again, if maybe we could set up, if necessary, we could actually, since you weren't able to be here, have the videotape made available to you so you can actually see the testimony that came in with the disclaimers as to where there were, in fact, differences that were being put on the record, so there would, in fact, be an understanding that there was a parting of the ways, a difference of opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did watch it on the Internet.
Oh, okay.
I was very ill, but I did watch it on the Internet, and I was writing furiously as I watched it.
Yeah.
It seemed like there was many things that were taken out of that
Mr. Chair, it occurs to me that this is the kind of discussion that should go on in a work session.
We've noticed
a public hearing for this evening. We've got a lot of citizens of Oregon who've come to present their perspectives, and it seems to me we ought to get on with that process rather than having discussion here among the committee, which will happen in due course.
All right. And with that, let's go ahead and get started. I'm going to ask for representatives of the Farm Bureau. I believe is Mr. Schellenberg here?
Excuse me.
Can you hear me, testimony?
Good evening, co-chairs Brzezinski in person. I'm Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. With me tonight is the president of the Oregon Farm Bureau, Barry DeBue, and president of the Yamhill County Farm Bureau, Zach Christensen. And we'll start off with comments from Mr. DeBue and then proceed to Mr. Christensen, and then finally I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you, co-chairs George and Prozonski. Appreciate the opportunity. And Representative McPherson, I'm sorry, I was overlooking all that.
And don't forget Vice Chair Representative Girard.
To all the co-chairs and all the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you today.
Howdy.
My apologies. My name is Barry Bashu, for the record. I'm the president of the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation and farm near Gresham, Oregon, raise a variety of crops. By their very nature, campaigns surrounding ballot initiatives rely more heavily on anecdotes and sound bites than they do on the discussion of facts, opinions, and consequences in a public forum. This lack of public discourse often leads to more questions than answers. Measure 37 is no exception. Not all the answers can be found within the measure itself. There are only three ways to answer them: through the courts, through the legislature, or through further ballot measures. Of the three, the legislature is the best venue to find the intersection of public sentiment, legislative expertise, and sound public policy. There's been much discussion about what people really wanted from Measure 37. I am loath to make assumptions to what motivates voters on this or any other issue. And frankly, now the point is moot. What is relevant is the opportunity to bring clarity and direction to the process of handling the resulting claims. This benefits the claimants, the agencies that must deal with the claims, and the public at large. Consistency, predictability, and an understanding of the parameters are fundamental to any land use decision or policy. A strong agricultural economy is critical to the state of Oregon. Sound public policy should recognize the commitment that farmers, ranchers, and foresters make to the management of public and private lands, the state's wildlife, and the enhancements of water quality. The cumulative effect of large numbers of non-farm homes built in the midst of production agriculture creates increased potential for conflict for the use of the land and other aspects of the infrastructure. The legislature is faced with the unenviable task of balancing the outcome of the ballot measure with its shortcomings. It is incumbent on us all to make sure that the needs of agriculture in the state are addressed in this process. No other organization represents more real stakeholders in agricultural land issues than Farm Bureau. We have long advocated that maintaining an agricultural land base is critical to the survival of agriculture in the state. We are a very diverse state with over 220 commodities. Nationally, we rank number one in the production of 14 of them. Agriculture is responsible for more than $12 billion in economic activity, or approximately 9% of the Oregon's gross state product. 1 in 12 jobs is connected to agriculture. By volume, agriculture and food products are the largest export out of the Port of Portland. You will hear testimony from the other members of my panel today as to direct impacts on farms and to the technical aspects of Farm Bureau's proposals and how they can become part of the framework for addressing the fixes of Measure 37. In brief, our concerns can be generalized as follows. Competing uses for land zoned for agriculture increases conflict caused by a lack of understanding of the practices involved in farming. The dust, sounds, and smell of farming are not appreciated by all of our neighbors. More non-farm homes means more potential conflicts and competition for available farmland. Protection of agricultural water rights is a fundamental part of Farm Bureau policy. Oregon needs to invest in groundwater studies so that decisions are based on solid information. The Water Resources Department needs the flexibility to ensure that homes built do not cause injury to existing irrigation rights, especially in critical groundwater management areas where even irrigation rights are already harshly restricted. Right to farm legislation is designed to provide farmers with the necessary legal protection to allow them to continue to farm utilizing accepted farm practices. It is not a foolproof system, and protection for these practices must be strengthened and recognized, especially in the settlement of any Measure 37 claims. In closing, I would like to thank the committee for taking on the task of trying to craft a solution to this difficult and controversial issue. Agriculture faces a number of other bills this session that will have devastating impacts on the industry. I would like to take the liberty of encouraging the legislature and members of this committee to address each of them with a recognition of the difficulties facing agriculture today and a willingness to help reduce our ever-growing regulatory burden. A profitable and successful agricultural sector is a win-win for farmers, the state's economy, and the environment. Land base is the key component of this success, but of critical need are water, crop protection tools, labor, the ability to use industry-accepted animal husbandry practices, air quality standards based on science instead of emotion, and the other tools needed to utilize the land for its intended purpose. I appreciate the opportunity to address on behalf of the Oregon Farm Bureau today, and thank you for your interest and your commitment to this very difficult issue.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Zach Christensen. I'm a fourth-generation farmer in Yamhill County. I'm here today on behalf of myself as well as the Yamhill County Farm Bureau to speak in favor of creating a fix to the chaos that Measure 37 has created. I personally farm grass seed, hazelnuts, clover, specialty seed crops on 3,500 acres, most of which is leased ground. My farm employs six full-time family wage jobs as well as numerous seasonal positions. There are many challenges in agriculture today, not the least of which is urban encroachment and land development. Quality ground is a limited and scarce resource. Out of the 3,500 acres I farm, 472 acres currently have Measure 37 claims on them. That's about 14%. On most of these acres that have Measure 37 claims, I'm unable to secure long-term lease because of the uncertainty that Measure 37 has created, whether it is to be developed or not. The quality of these properties adjacent to these claims is also in question. Will it be developed into a subdivision which creates management nightmares? Will the development abuse the groundwater, which is necessary for the irrigation? I do currently farm some acreage bordering the urban growth boundary of McMinnville. My experience there has been one of frustration. Garbage, aggressive drivers, abusive neighbors, disrespect for the property, as well as the agricultural community as a whole, are just a few of the challenges. To bring this mentality further into the rural landscape, I believe would be a mistake. The issue of land values to young farmers is devastating. Land that while seemingly overpriced on a production standard, can still be purchased by leveraging everything that you own currently, is now completely out of reach for somebody who's just beginning into the agriculture community. With the ever-increasing cost of production, the volatility in the marketplace, the want of the older generation to sell out, move to the golf course is completely understandable. I do, quite frankly, have a hard time saying that they should not have every right to do so. But our state and our communities must remain healthy to survive and strive in the future for the generations to come. Thank you for your time and consideration on this matter. I would once again encourage you to work towards a compromise that protects farmland, promotes careful and sensible rural development, and creates an environment which agricultural interests and urban interests will thrive in the future. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Don Schallenberg again. Oregon Farm Bureau's Land Use Advisory Committee and the Farm Bureau Board of Directors have considered the issues and unanswered questions surrounding the interpretation and implementation of Measure 37. In analyzing their positions and comparing them to the framework concepts, I can make the following comments. And they took positions on six of the different areas, and those are valuation, right to farm, number of dwellings per claim, subdivisions, ownership, and transferability. We believe the appropriate method of determining the loss of value would be to compare the value of the undeveloped property on the day before the law or rule became effective and the difference in value the day after. The difference should then be indexed for inflation to the date of the claim. As I understand the framework, the only application for valuation is for the prospective claims based on new rules or laws that would reduce property value. Our discussion did not address that application. Rather, it considered how to determine the appropriate loss of value for compensation purposes. Right to farm. The framework is silent on this issue. We would suggest that the bill include language making it patently clear that the limitations of the right to farm statutes are not a basis for filing a Measure 37 claim. Number of dwellings per claim. The framework is a little more generous than we would suggest. We do take a different tact and base the number of allowed dwellings on the state minimum lot size requirements for farmland. For example, what we're suggesting is the minimum lot size for other than rangeland is 80 acres. So for every 80 acres on which a person qualified for a claim, they could have one dwelling. If you owned 800 acres, you could have built and could have built 10 homes on those acres. You could do so now. Regarding the parcel size, the framework, again, is more generous. In order to minimize the footprint of Measure 37 claims and prevent parcels from turning into weed patches that would contaminate adjacent fields, we suggest a one-acre maximum lot size in the Willamette Valley, a two-acre maximum lot size outside the valley on other than high-value farmland, and a one-acre lot size on the high-value farmland. Of course, if only one dwelling is desired, then there should be no maximum or minimum lot size requirement. Subdivisions. We believe the subdivision issue is adequately addressed by the framework. Ownership. We believe the ownership concept is a bit too restrictive in the framework. We suggest that a change to an LLC or a corporation should be acceptable if the control of the land does not change in the process. That is, if the individual who owned the property retains a majority ownership of the stock, then nothing has really changed. Transferability, finally. On this, we basically agree with the framework, except that we believe that if both spouses were to die, the claim should be automatically transferred to a family member as defined in Measure 37. The Oregon Farm Bureau would like to offer our thanks to the members of the committee and in particular to the members of the subgroup who have worked tirelessly to produce a framework that will allow this issue to move forward. Thank you for the opportunity to share our thoughts and suggestions as you work through this important issue, and we'd be happy to take any questions if that's the desire of the chairs.
Yeah. I'm really more like to limit questions at this point and take the testimony in. I'll give some deferment to the committee if they want to. The reality is the more questions we ask, the less time we have for people. So
I just wanted to see if we could get that last bit in writing at some point. Okay, that's all.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll let one question here from Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Barry, obviously I grew up in agriculture my entire life.
Ask the question.
I am. So I actually know the answer to this question, but what is the Farm Bureau, what do county farm bureaus around the state define as a farmer to be for voting membership?
George, member of the committee, voting membership in the Farm Bureau is determined by the county Farm Bureaus themselves, and that's because we're a grassroots organization, and that's the best way I can define it.
And maybe since we have a county chair here, maybe we could get a better definition, because as I called around, it's about $1,000 of agricultural production is typically the average to get voting membership, and I don't know if a president of the county Farm Bureau, what's the determination of a farmer for Yamhill County Farm Bureau membership?
Without looking at the book, I couldn't tell you precisely what it is, but it would encompass what you would consider to be a hobby farm as well as production agriculture.
Correct. Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Senator Farioli, I believe you wanted to make some comments. While he's coming up, I'm going to just make sure everyone knows what we're going to do. We have a number of people that have signed up that are saying that they're from 100 miles or further out. We have a rule in the legislature that we try to give courtesy, allowing them to come forward because of the distance they traveled. Don't be offended if I ask you where you're from to see if you are, in fact, 100 miles away. And with that, the other thing is if you have written testimony, please hand that in, and please do not read your written testimony. We will all take care of that. We need you to speak from the heart and summarize whatever you want to tell us regarding the framework. Senator.
Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the courtesy of addressing you. And I was about to remind you of the 100-mile issue, and I'm so gratified that you pointed out that you would be granting courtesy to the folks that traveled more than 100 miles to be here, because a lot of folks that live in the rural communities make the drive and never get to the top of the list.
So they always get to the top of the list on this committee.
Thank you, sir. I was just thinking, reminiscing, as it were, about the difficulty that I had as chairman of the committee that undertook to deal with the navigability issue. You have taken up an issue that will literally touch every household in the state of Oregon. And so I just really want to admonish you with one issue. We cannot find common ground where the members of all parties and perspectives can agree unless all parties and perspectives are in the meeting. And you heard from members of the Senate Republican caucus that they have not actually been allowed to present, offer, and discuss in the working group. And I would urge you as a committee, since you have undertaken a tremendous burden and a tremendous challenge, I will say even greater than the navigability issue, which foundered on the rocks of... We were able to argue everyone to neutrality, and everything went away. And I hope that Measure 37 doesn't turn out to be insoluble. I believe in my heart there are people in this room that could offer compromise and that would be willing to participate if they were honestly heard and if we had honest brokerage with the idea that inclusion creates the politics of hope and not the politics of fear. And I believe at this point we have more people afraid of what this committee might do than we have hoping that we will actually get resolution that all parties can support. So I would just leave the committee with this challenge. A 1 acre lot, maximum lot size, won't fly in Harney County. It's just not going to work. There's a lot of perspective that needs to be added to your work, and I hope that you will open this process up and actually let people participate in building a framework that's workable so that at the end of the day we have something that will not break on party lines, but will in fact be a product that Oregonians accept as an honestly brokered compromise. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Any questions or anything? Any comments? I will just say this for the record, since we've talked about people being in or not in the discussions. It was just determination because of wanting to have as much freedom and from perception that we had vested people on the work group. Decisions were made based on, let's say, representations and associations that some members had as to why the committee, the co-chairs chose who we chose to be on that work group. With that said, what I'm going to do is go ahead and call up the first three that are over 100 miles. We will be bringing in another panel, but I want to try to get individuals in as well, so we're not sitting here listening to just panels from the interest groups. So the first one is Larry Martin, who's from Hood River. Gerald Freeman. Mr. Freeman? Okay, just checking. Thank you for your honesty, sir. Gordon Schoen? Mr. Schoen, where are you from? Yes, sir. Please come up. That's a bingo. And then I also have Sarah Martin, who's also listed to be from Hood River.
Oh, that seems right.
Well, that'll be our first three.
I'm just turning mine in.
Okay. So you're not going to be speaking?
No.
All right. Thank you very much. And then the next person I have is Gary Reinhart, who says that he's 250 miles away. Mr. Reinhart, where are you from, sir?
South.
I'm south. Yes, sir. Come on up. Why don't we just start on this end?
Okay.
State your name for the record, and please give us your testimony. Remember, you got about 2 minutes.
Okay, my name is Larry Martin. As you referenced, I'm from Hood River. I'm a fruit grower there. And I'll have to apologize at the onset. I didn't have the framework until just this afternoon, but I do have a couple points that I believe speak to the framework.
Okay.
This is a time for you, our elected officials, to exhibit true leadership. Please show your actions that, by your actions, that planning and zoning are not bad words, but are necessary concepts in a maturing society. We're no longer living in the wild and unfettered West where anything goes. We must proceed carefully from here. Measure 37 addressed real inequities in our system of land use regulation, but it addressed them poorly. As a society, we do need to be fair to landowners whose values were truly diminished by prior land use regulations, but we do not need to reward speculators. Let us establish a fair and equitable method of arriving at a dollar values that have been lost. As a society that values and accepts reasonable planning, we owe citizens who have suffered loss some type of redress. But merely accepting the values stated in the individual Measure 37 claims is a truly horrible public policy. A fair and equitable method of appraising lost land values is truly the key to restoring stability to our land use regulations. As a fruit grower in the Hood River Valley growing pears and apples, I'm very concerned about Measure 37's potential impact to our state's agricultural economy. If unplanned subdivisions and randomly sited homes are allowed to proliferate throughout our ag land, it's only a matter of time before we are regulated out of business by such potential regulation legislation as the proposed SB 20. Please do all that you can to prevent subdivisions and commercial development from creeping into our precious ag land. We need to do all that we can to prevent exporting our food production overseas, as has happened to our energy requirements. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And next, we need to get a microphone in front of you. Thank you. Just one.
My name is Gordon Shawn.
And Mr. Shawn, if you could just move back a little bit, but it's a very sensitive microphone.
Is that about right?
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. Just a brief history. This property was purchased in 1963. It's surrounded on three sides by development. It's sagebrush and juniper dryland, joins an older rural subdivision. And I applied in 1984 to start work on it. I had one phase of it finished when Thousand Friends through Jefferson County's plan through LCDC, and my property was downzoned from rural residential to farm ground. I had three horses on it for a month, and they ate everything off of it. I applied for a zone change in 96, got it through the county, and then was taken to Luba, and I lost out. Now, I have reapplied. I'm at the stage of the county signing off on my final plat to be recorded. The only thing that's held it up is the banks are a little spooky about loaning money for construction, so I've had to make a personal guarantee with the balance of my property to get this done so we can go ahead with the bond. Now, my concern is that I've gone this far and spent over $100,000 in development costs and ready to go ahead in construction, and my concern is, where are you going to leave me? That's my question. I feel that I'm vested in this property. I've done everything I was supposed to. The county's completely satisfied. In fact, they feel like that this is a good project. Even one man that was on the commission that opposes Measure 37 said if anything should be passed, this should be the piece. And my concern is you're not going to leave me afoot.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Reinhart?
Thank you, chairs and committee, for giving me this opportunity to testify about Measure 37. Measure 37 is not a partisan issue. It's an Oregon issue. Citizens of the state want this vague and misleading law resolved. If you do not have the courage to allow one house that the law was perceived to do, return it to the voters by special election and see if this is what they voted for in the first place. I am confident that the majority of those who voted for this originally would not do so today. I base this on my own family and friends who are misinformed and voted in support. As a dryland wheat farmer located approximately 6 miles south of Pendleton, I have at least 937 major claims bordering all within 3 miles, all of which are for multi-house developments. Two of these are for 300 homes or more. My property has been in my family for over 150 years before Oregon was a state, far longer than the Major 37 claim owners. It came into my name in 2002 as it was passed down in the family. I do not qualify for a claim or waiver, and I don't want one. I never voted for it and have virtually no say on those that do. Most of the lands close to me are in CRP, Conservation Reserve Program, planted to grass to protect water quality and provide wildlife habitat. Owners are paid yearly by the federal government on 10-year contracts. I see no way they lost any value as they watched the grass grow. Environmental damage caused by roads, homes, and exempt wells will be considerable, while neighbors who want to farm and ranch will pay the price. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next three will be Tom McDonald. Mr. McDonald, if you're in the room, if you could tell me where you're from.
From Agnes, Oregon.
Please come up. Bill Etherton. Mr. Etherton, where are you from, sir?
Address, Jefferson County.
All right. And also David Hart. Mr. Hart. You're within, if you could please wait, sir. Then the other person will be Eric, maybe Kangler. Mr. Kangler? Gentlemen, why don't we get started? He may be in the other room. We'll give him an opportunity to get here. Go ahead and state your name for the record.
Yes. My name's Tom McDonald. I'm from Madras, Oregon, and I thank this group for letting us appear here today. I will read this, if you don't mind, and I hope you use the same clock that some of the earlier ones were timed with. So, my wife, Marion, and myself have ranch property in the eastern part of Jefferson County at Ashwood. The ranch was established at this location by my grandfather in 1878 and has been operated by my family ever since. I strongly oppose the various bills and proposals such as Senate Bill 588, and when I wrote this, I wasn't aware of Senate Bill 1019, but I include that in, and House Bill 3540 and House Bill 3153 that have been constantly bandied about by some legislators and a few well-organized groups purportedly to be the only true friends of Oregon. In other words, leave Measure 37 alone. As long as different individuals and organizations are trying to interpret the writing of Measure 37, it should be remembered and honored as the restoration of the owner's property rights at the time of their purchasing. The state of Oregon's legislators should rid themselves of this can of worms and turn these decisions back to the counties. Oregon is so diverse, we all surely recognize that one size does not fit all. Jefferson County isn't the same as Multnomah, nor is Wheeler-like Lane, or for that matter, Hood River County. I'm sure most understand there are many local concerns and community goals, but let the individual counties map their own destiny. I ask you, don't alter or continue to tinker with Measure 37. That has already been approved by the Oregon voters. I want to give you a little background because I'm sure I have several minutes left.
You actually have no seconds left. You just would that
and,
last part.
But I probably am filing the largest monetary claim in the state of Oregon. I would say it's much larger than Plum Creek and all. It consists of 6,240 acres. And we have a vision for it. We've put in a lot of money. The claim was 3.5 inches thick. I've had all professional help. All of the numbers in there, none of them are mine. And so This is an important thing. And the senator earlier spoke about fear.
Mr. McDonald.
It's trust.
Yeah, Mr. McDonald, you're out of time. I'm sorry. 3 minutes. Yes, sir.
Members of the panel, good afternoon. My name is Bill Atherton. I live at 682 Southeast Turner Street in Madras, Oregon. Once again, I have been plucked from my glorious agricultural pursuit to come here. But I appreciate doing that and having the opportunity to tell you that I am not a Measure 37 claimant and would be ashamed to do it, primarily because it established such an awful precedent in law of one privileged group who happened to be privileged by age of ownership and so forth, as opposed to their neighbors who may not have that privilege. And for that reason, I'm concerned in your framework provisions for retrospective claims. My preference, and I think the majority of voters in this state would prefer that the measure take effect at the date of enactment, or it would be December 2004. Because what most people wanted was they were concerned about government regulations affecting their property values and having a legitimate process for reviewing those claims. In that regard, you're making progress. Use of the defined appraisal method is a good step forward. Use of a more formal compensation process is also admirable. My only suggestion there, but that may be outside what you want to take on at this time, is that if you're going to pay for the takings, which I think is legitimate, you also have to collect for the givings for that farmer who gets the freeway interchange put on his property, upzonings and the like. Nobody seems to want to talk about that, but I think this is a magnificent opportunity to do that.
Mr. Atherton,
my only final comment is your committee on land use fairness, and one of the most unfair things in the land use process is the mandatory 20-year land supply law, and I would urge you that you support Senator Schrader's bill, House Senate Bill 335,
right,
and revive it.
Thank you very much. And I assume you're Eric?
Yes.
All right.
I was in the other room.
Yeah, we're just making sure.
Good evening, senators and representatives. My name is Eric Kanzler, and I'm the executive director of Central Oregon Land Watch, a land use and planning advocacy group based in Bend. On behalf of our board, our staff, and our many members, I'm here to offer our support for the framework. I'm also submitting a map to you in the written testimony, and I direct you to take a look at that on your own time or refer to the written testimony for more detail. As for the framework itself, I'd like to address very quickly 4 points. Measure 37 was passed so that long-time landowners could recover basic rights lost as a result of restrictive land use policies. In most cases, what was actually lost was an ability to build perhaps one or two houses. The vast majority of the public could not have been expected to recognize the enormous loophole that was being created. In recognition of this, an effort to tone the law down so that it achieves what voters intended and nothing more is entirely warranted. In regards to a so-called fast track, as mentioned, the expectation in 2004 seems to have been that the measure would enable certain landowners to recover the ability to build, in most cases, one, perhaps two houses. Ideally, that's all a fast track should allow. Claims of four or more units, which are commercial in nature, should not be fast tracked. Certain landowners have been granted special privileges under Measure 37 to which their neighbors are not entitled. These privileges are based on their long-term personal investment in their land. The ability to pursue limited development should remain personal in nature and not be allowed to transfer to subsequent owners. Lastly, Measure 37 has severely limited the ability of state and local governments to plan for the future out of fear that new policies will invoke new claims. Under any compromise solution, government must be allowed to return to its job without fear of repercussion as a result of Measure 37. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Our next panel is going to include, I believe it's Frank Goodson, then it looks like Ed Cotard, and Candy, oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, and Andra Bobbitt. Mr. Goodson, just for the record, where are you from?
Klamath Falls.
Thank you, sir.
And
when you're
Chairman,
when you're ready.
Mr. Vice Chairman, including our very good representative from Klamath Falls, Bill Girard, and committee persons. My name is Frank Goodson from Klamath Falls. Among other things, I'm on the board of directors for a group called the Committee for a Healthy Klamath Economy and also our Chamber of Commerce. 71% of the voters in Klamath County voted for Measure 37. That's the highest of any county in the state. And a very, very large number of that 71% are farmers and ranchers, too. And I think that probably 71% of the farmers and ranchers in Klamath County also support it. And the same 71 have been encouraging our federal government to continue in-lieu payments on forest land so that we can continue to have schools and roads. I think we're going to lose that battle, and we hope we don't lose this battle to the state. As far as the framework, you know, I would recommend that you take one of two positions. Either remove the barrier of to transferability and nothing else, just that. That would be fair to the people. Or take no action at all and let it settle itself out in the courts and let it settle itself out with the voters of our state. So those are my comments.
Thank you very much. If you go ahead and identify yourself, sir.
I'm Ed Chotard.
Chotard, okay.
I live at 9227 Northwest Boise Drive in Madras, Oregon.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Senators, for having me here today. I'm a farmer from Jefferson County. I've grown up farming. My dad bought the farm in 1950. And I wanted to continue farming. And, you know, he bought that land for $125 an acre. And now it's worth probably $2,000 to $3,000 an acre. So I'm questioning, you know, we haven't lost any value with the regulations. You know, if you subdivide it, you may get $10,000, but you're not going to be farming it anymore. If our neighbors subdivide, you know, we grow grass seed, wheat, hay, you know. We're out there, they're cutting grass seed at 2, 3 o'clock in the mornings when the dew's on, so you don't shatter the grass. We're getting out and baling, you know, midnight to 1, on into early morning times when the dew's on to keep our leaves on our hay. And anytime you have more houses, well, these are going to be non-farm dwellings, and they'll be upset with the commotion that we cause it when they're wanting to sleep. And I'd appreciate you kind of protecting our farmland. And we're also in an irrigation project where we're growing carrot seed. We grow there. It's like, I think they produce about 60 or 70% of the carrot seed that is produced in the whole world. Not just the state, it's a considerable amount of grass seed, carrot seed, excuse me.
Mr. Cotard, you're out of time.
Okay, thank you for...
Thank you. And this must be Andrea?
Yes, Steel Rock. Senators and representatives, I've come from Steel Rock, 102 miles, according to MapQuest, to testify about the unfairness Measure 37 is spreading throughout our state, including the rural residential neighborhoods along the coast. I am involved in land use issues serving on the Lincoln County Planning Commission and working with mapping for the OSU No Events Program with GIS Systems and as their webmaster. I'm here today as a concerned citizen. Lincoln County is currently processing 151 Measure 37 claims, including the Plum Creek holdings, which potentially could double the developed land in our county. but I'm here to talk about how a 7-plus acre claim will adversely impact the Seal Rock residential neighborhood and how the proposed framework is ignoring these aspects of Measure 37. The last claim on the last day before the Measure 37 fuzzy December deadline proposes to build a condominium hotel resort in the heart of the Seal Rock residential area, just south and adjacent to the Seal Rock State Park. The current site has a quaint, low-volume use of an RV park established in the 50s. The claimant would also like to have the private recreational use of the beach, as their family has owned the property since 1910, before 101 was there. Inheriting the property in 1974, the owner had 6 years to apply for other conditional R4 uses before the zoning was converted to R1 in 1980. Instead, he chose to continue operating the RV park, now as a non-conforming use. Measure 37 has now provided a windfall opportunity to change that prior business decision and get carte blanche to roll back the land use process, which was established to plan it for appropriate and fair growth. This is not fair to other property owners in this residential neighborhood. It's not fair to future property owners who, under Measure 37, must not only look at the surrounding land uses and zoning, but track down what zoning existed for each property owner at their purchase. It's not fair to Oregon taxpayers who will underwrite the new infrastructure unanticipated by this oddball of development. How reasonable and fair is this? Zoning and the land use process are supposed to provide property owners and local government some assurances of the future outlook and growth in their community and infrastructure planning. The site is currently zoned could be subdivided substantially into individual high-end Ocean View home sites. The site's completely surrounded by single-family residents, some dating from 1897, my home, and including the claimant's family vacation home built in 1928. A condominium hotel with added height and building density doesn't belong in a single home residential area that has been R1 for 27 years. It would not be fair to force the owner to continue operating the RV park or not to subdivide it into single-family home sites.
Ms. Bobbitt?
Yet this is already allowed.
You're out of time.
Just one more sentence, please.
Okay.
Thank you for your time, but I would please include framework fixes to Measure 37 for fairness for all Oregonians on the coast and in the valley.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, we're going to take one more panel, and then I'm going to ask for an invited group. If the OFIC is here, we understand one of the members is here. If they want to come up after this next group, please be ready to do so. Walter Ponsford. Walter, are you here, sir? And where are you from, sir? Come on in. And Joe Luttrell. Mr. Luttrell. And also looks like Phil Steinbeck out of Douglas County. Why don't we go ahead and get started, and we'll see if the other two gentlemen join you.
I have a question. Gary Harris, farmer in Jefferson County, sent this map. I wondered if I could lend it to you to look at and have it returned.
We can, as long as we know who to send it back to or how we're going to get it to whoever, and then the committee will take possession of it, and the co-chairs will assure you that
Killingsworth would receive it.
Okay, as long as it has some type of identification on there. So
I,
we
I
don't
know them both. I can help you find them.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
We got you covered. I've got members on each side here.
Thank you, sir.
It's a map showing, demonstrating the amount of claims in Jefferson County,
okay,
especially concerning the irrigation project, the federal irrigation project. And I would encourage you to see what impact this has upon our county. Thank you for this time. Appreciate it.
And state your name for the record, please.
Walter Ponsford.
Okay.
Jefferson County. Without realizing it, most of us have not thought about the million new residents, or almost an added third to our population, which is causing a lot of the problem. At the same time, we have never bad-mouthed people much, except maybe in jest. We do have problems with where we are going to place people and how in the world they pay their way. And with that in mind, we have to think about where people will logically fit within the framework of what we have here. County government is not city government. If you place rural subdivisions in the hinterland, then you're causing real problem. We have a problem. Nice, wonderful people in Crooked River Ranch, a subdivision where people move in and expect city-like services. County government's not designed to take care of that. Never has been. If you recall the horrible conflict between Gresham and Portland for years with that ground in between, which was county government trying to survive, people expecting services at county rates. If you allow these subdivisions into any county's hinterland, you are going to greatly impact it. A $30 million budget in the Jefferson County area, $4 million of it is local property tax. It would have to be greatly expanded to give police services and whatever else. The people who intend to do this subdividing say they don't intend to see that, but whoever they sell to will, in fact, ask for services as though they are in the city without paying city-type taxes.
Mr. Ponsfer, your time is run.
I've only begun.
We enjoyed everything you shared with us. If you have other stuff in writing, or if you want to send us more in writing, feel free to do that. Mr. is it Luttrell?
Yes, that will work.
Why don't you correct me on the record?
Well, with Luttrell or Luttrell.
Luttrell.
It works either way.
All right. And where are you from, sir?
St. Helens, Oregon, but I was working in Rainier, which put me over the 105. You kind of opened this up to framework and definitions, and that's what I'm addressing here.
Thank you.
And one famous person said, what is the meaning of is? My first definition is democracy. One, A, government by the people, especially rule of majority. B, a government in which the supreme power is vested in the people and exercised directly or indirectly through a system of representation usually involving periodically held free elections. Oligarchy, government by the few. A government where a small group exercises control, especially for selfish and corrupt purposes, also a group exercising such control. Private property, land not owned by the government or dedicated to public use. These are very important definitions. We are here today to discuss a law created by a democracy that has been created with great time, expense, and effort. Our Supreme Court has ruled the law to be constitutional. We voters have been intimidated by government officials since the inception of 197352. It is my hope that I come here to be heard and not to be patronized, but this is being the third time. I am beginning to wonder if our state is or has been operating as an oligarchy. We tell the people, get out, vote, be sure and vote, every vote counts. It's beginning to sound a bit hypocritical. Just being here today feels a bit hypocritical. I believe the voter thought that whether it passed or failed, their vote would count. They expected 197352 to be enacted as they approved it the day they voted. To suggest they didn't really mean this or that is simply subjective and exemplifies the meaning of oligarchy form of government. The voter pays your salaries, built this building, and all the other infrastructure we use every day. They are the boss. Support the law by the people. Respect it until people say otherwise. I believe if they have made a mistake, they will rectify that mistake. What arrogance it takes to pretend to be a democracy if we don't do that. This is an issue about power. It's about who controls the land. Those of us pro 197352 simply want to control our land, our own land. We are not talking about controlling others' voters' lands. It seems those against 197352 have designs on our land and seem to know what is best. The legislature does not want to give up the power and control as it has had for 34 years. This is all understandable, but it's certainly not democracy. In order to stem the hated subdivision in Oregon, we need not control the developer. We need to control migration to Oregon. Also limit the birth rate inside
Oregon. Luttrell.
A successful developer cannot build a home. He cannot sell to a family. It ends up being about control as to where this family can live, limiting the families, the choices of building sites. Thank you.
You're more than welcome, sir. Mr. Steinbeck.
Phil Steinbeck, Senior Planner, Douglas County Planning Department. I'm from Roseburg, Oregon. I'll keep my comments to the one-page handout that I received when I walked in this evening, or this afternoon. I will focus mostly on the purposes here. My comments are as follows. Douglas County supports making it easier and faster for claimants.
Douglas County supports transferability of approved Measure 37 claims. When it comes to making sure that large claims are properly documented, all claims need to be properly documented. Douglas County does not support additional newly created standards specific to certain claims. I'm seeing a number being used here of limiting home sites and claims to 20. For instance, in Douglas County, that would reduce the number of potential subdivision lots by about 1,000 or about $10 million worth of real estate value. Number four is resolve pending lawsuits surrounding ownership rights and impacts on neighbors and communities. This would be a plus. Number five, preserve farmlands and forest lands. Preservation of farmlands and forest lands is done through the statewide planning goals. Measure 37 is a property rights issue. Number six, protection of groundwater supplies. Groundwater protection is done through several bodies of law, including federal regulations. Measure 37 doesn't supersede these, and so there's a health and safety issue there, so I'm not sure how that is being brought forth. Number seven is clarify Measure 37 going forward. In Douglas County in 2006, 231 claims were filed. As of this date, 171 have been processed. The remaining 60 will be processed by June 2nd, 2007. We feel that the measure is workable. My eighth note here is Douglas County supports development of a compensation fund for claims as proposed in Measure 37. And as I'm seeing highlighted here, we have concern with creating an ombudsman because you're lengthening the Measure 37 process, which appears to conflict with the first purpose statement of making it easier and faster for claimants. We get a little nervous anytime we start adding pieces to a process. We don't support that kind of a thing.
Mr. Steinbeck, you're out of time.
Okay. Can I make one more statement?
You may.
House Bill 3285 is a bill that has been introduced by Representative Hanada, Representative Morgan, Representative Krieger, and Senator Jeff Cruz. It allows, it's proposed to allow one dwelling on a property as a right, as a property right or dwelling by right. It's currently in a different committee, and I would ask that the committee consider adding it to the list of bills being undertaken with this committee here. I think Representative Roblin is aware of that particular bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and is the OFIC representatives here? Okay. This will go to the next group of panel. Chachir. Yeah. Al, is it Chachir? Mr. Chachir. And Kate McCarthy. And Michael McCarthy. Why don't we go ahead and see if we're going to make sure. They'll be after this panel. Hello, and you are?
I'm Al Sashir.
Sashir.
Medford, Oregon.
Wonderful.
I'm in Applegate, Oregon, rather, between Medford and Grants Pass.
All right. Please give us your testimony.
My testimony, sir, is probably something that I haven't heard answered. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. And thanks for letting me speak. 1973, I bought 37 acres. That was woodland. And in 1983, I was rezoned to exclusive farm with the hopes of getting, with the promise I would get two farm, 5-acre parcels for a non-farm dwelling. Everything went down the tube. I was approved by LCDC, planning, and the commissioners. Fish and Game said I was in the sensitive area for winter range for elk and deer. Everything went down the tube. So now I'm back again on 2 5-acre parcels on the non-farm portion, and the farm portion of mine is just a non-profit hobby. And across the road from me, 10-acre parcels have been turned into 5-acre parcels. On the two proposed parcels I have one non-farm dwelling that I was allowed to rent. And I have water, electricity, septic approval, and road approval. I've put in driveways. I've improved the private road, which is on my property, to serve these two pieces of property, and also the neighbors across the road who got permission for 5-acre parcels years ago. So my question to you is, my paperwork is now at the surveyor's office. Do I continue on this route, or am I into a situation that's going to be a roadblock, and all the money I've put into this thing, does it suddenly stop? I've jumped through all the hoops. I've paid all the fees, which has amounted to almost what I paid for the 37 acres. That's all I want. I don't want no compensation, nothing. I just want 2 5-acre parcels for two houses on. Am I into a no-win situation? Do I still keep pouring good money after bad? And this is my question to you. Who may I get an answer from?
Mr. Chester, we're not here to try to answer your questions.
I understand
today.
Can you refer me to someone?
We'll see whether or not someone can get back to you, if there's someone that actually can give you more direction than what we can.
I would sure appreciate it, because it's just good money after bad.
All right. And
that's been since 1983 I've been on this program. I don't have that many years left. Right now, I'm pushing 80.
And do I have Kate McCarthy here? Is this Kate?
Is it my turn?
Are you Kate?
Yes.
Okay. And where are you from?
Hood River County.
Okay. And put your name on the record.
Hood River Valley. And I really felt that since you said that you had to address all these bills that I didn't get until today, I wasn't prepared. I have prepared testimony, but it isn't right on the beam as far as those bills go. I haven't had time to study them.
I understand that. If you have any comments,
go ahead or not.
Yeah. Well, if you have any comment that you want to give us regarding the fixes or stuff that you want to have, we've been pretty open today.
Yeah.
So go ahead and give us. You got 2 minutes. Please put your name on the record.
Well, I have a little different perspective, because I heard a lot of talk back about taking a big look. So I was trying to take a big look.
All right.
My family has owned property in the Hood River Valley since 1909. No economy, however technologically advanced, can survive the collapse of its environmental support systems. This statement by Lester Brown from his book Plan B, written because Plan A, business as usual, is not working well for civilization. Lester Brown has spent many years studying worldwide conditions and is considered by many to be the most important voice of our time. Another quote is relevant worldwide. We are facing, now this relates to agriculture and the need to preserve agriculture. We are facing shrinking forests, eroding soils, falling water tables, more frequent crop withering heat waves, collapsing fisheries, and expanding deserts, deteriorating rangelands, dying coral reefs, melting glaciers, rising seas, more powerful storms, disappearing species, and soon shrinking oil supplies. And CO2 emissions are exceeding fixation everywhere. The bottom line is that the world is in what ecologists call an overshoot and collapse mode. Food may be the first sector to unravel. Food is safety, is a safety and security issue. And I got on this tack because I went to the affair on the Capitol steps on Saturday, and I heard someone of his speakers trying to bring up the issue of global warming, and he was laughed out of the place. He couldn't finish his testimony. And I think it's time people woke up to how precious our natural resources are, and how what a a disaster, global warming. It's time we got real and paid attention to these global warming and the the catastrophes that brings.
Mrs. McCarthy, thank you very much. You're out of time.
Okay.
Thank you. And the next person we have is Michael McCarthy.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy from Parkdale, Oregon. We farm in the Hood River Valley, raise apples, pears, cherries, cattle, hay, Christmas trees on our family farm, which began in 1910 in Parkdale. I've been involved in land use since 1980, so I have a lot of history in land use. I support the proposed legislation with some changes, but I think the critical thing is it's time to fix it, and it's time to fix it now. It's time to clarify it. It's time to make it so this gentleman here can decide whether he's going ahead or not. It's time to make it so they don't have any more people that invest money and don't have a fix and can't do something with it. So I really think it's time to move ahead, and I think it's time to do something now, and I think this is a good framework, and it's a good start. I want to talk just for a minute about what's going on in Hood River County on Measure 37. There's 11,000 acres of farm and forest land in Hood River County with Measure 37 claims on it. That amounts to a proposal of 9,180 homes in the Hood River farm and forest zone. The Hood River County agriculture is worth $100 million a year to the county and to the state. Hood River County tree food industry is 14,000 acres. 14,000 acres, there's 11,000 acres of claims on farm and forest land. 9,180 homes proposed on farm and forest land in Hood River County. This means the end of the industry in Hood River County. Many of my friends at farm said this is the end of the industry if this is allowed to continue. There are some public officials and ag experts that also said this is the end of the industry if this is continued to go on as it's spelled out. We need this legislation with these changes to protect our industry. And I think that the legacy of this legislature will be, if it doesn't do something, the legacy of this legislature will be the end of the Hood River Valley fruit industry. So if that's what you want your legacy to be, then don't adopt this legislation. That's what you're going to be responsible for. We're going to put that on your tombstone. We're going to put that after your name, that you are responsible for the end of the fruit industry in Hood River County. So I want you all to think about that long and hard. 120-year industry, doomed to failure. The parcels are going to be too small to farm. Nobody's going to want to farm them. They won't be productive to farm. So those are my comments. I hope you can move ahead on this. Right. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, all three of you. Now we're going to take invited testimony. We have Oregonians in Action. Dave, I know you're here. I don't know if you have anyone else in your panel or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, President, Oregonians in Action. I know I have a short amount of time, and so it's really going to be hard for me to say a whole lot. We are obviously in opposition to the framework as advanced at Thursday's hearing, but I think what's more interesting is that you've got a whole group of people testifying today on a framework that may or may not change significantly based on the amendments that are being prepared, that haven't been prepared. The devil's in the details of land use planning. I've worked this issue for well over a decade, and I can tell you that a may or a shall makes a tremendous amount of difference. Just listening to the hearing on Thursday night, the presentation by Richard Whitman, who I know quite well, there are a number of unanswered questions. In the course of listening to that 50-minute presentation, I have 21 questions with subparts, some of which have three or four subparts, and we can't answer those questions until we actually get the language of the amendments. And so to hold a public hearing without having amendments and without giving people an adequate amount of time to prepare their testimony based on the actual language of the amendments, I think does a disservice to the people behind you and certainly to organizations like mine, where it's really difficult for me to know what to say about the particular language that you may adopt. And it's especially disconcerting knowing that I may have 2 minutes to testify. This is the only 2 minutes I have to testify.
Actually, I'm going to get a little bit more. Invited testimony. testimony. We're giving a little bit more, so you can take a deep breath here.
Well, okay, maybe I have 5 minutes to testify, but it wouldn't matter today if I had an hour to testify, because I can't give you cogent testimony without seeing the actual language of the amendment and knowing that if you adopt this, this is what this means, this is what this means. You might want to look at subsection 3 of your draft amendments. You can't do that. And so to schedule, I noticed on the schedule this is scheduled for a work session on Thursday. To schedule something for a work session, have people testify when they can't testify on the amendments really does a disservice, I think, to everybody that's here and especially to me. And so if I'm invited back when you actually have the amendments, maybe we can resolve some of these 21 questions that I have. But it'll certainly take, if I asked all 21 questions, number one, the committee probably couldn't answer them because you don't have the amendments in front of you. And number two, you need somebody in front of this committee that can answer them, and that will take far longer than the whatever amount of time you'll give me as invited testimony. I'd be happy to go through them one by one, but again, you're going to have a hard time answering them. So what I would suggest that you do is, number one, get the amendments prepared, then schedule a public hearing after the amendments have been prepared, after people have at least a day, and preferably more than a day, to review the amendments, at which point people can make comments on what it is that you'll actually be considering adopting, rather than some framework that doesn't represent an agreement from anybody, where people don't have an opportunity to say anything.
If you'd like to submit your 21 questions at any time, feel free to do so. Thank you for your comments at this point. We're going to go ahead and bring up the Association of Oregon Counties, Art Slack, and he will be our next of our invited, and then we'll go back to our public testimony.
Good evening, Mr. Co-Chairs, and thank you very much for the indulgence of letting me make a few comments. You've heard me testify. Sorry about that. My name's Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. Mr. Co-Chairs, you've heard me several times talk about the counties and the predicament they're in terms of processing the myriad of Major 37 claims that were received in the last 6 weeks prior to December 4th. Friday, I sent an email out to the counties asking a very simple question. Will you get done within the 180 days or will you not? And if you're not, how many claims will you have left? To that question, I received 28 responses from 28 counties. 8 counties have indicated that they will not get done by September 4th at this point, or September 2nd, that they will have claims yet to process.
Mr. Slack, just for clarification, you said September. Do you mean May?
May.
Okay.
Well, actually, it's yes. That's correct. I apologize.
No, that's fine. Just wanted to make sure the record's straight.
So they will not get done within the 100, 180 days. Those claims will vary from a couple, half a dozen, to Washington and Clackamas County, which will have potentially in excess of 100 at this point. At least one county has stopped processing all land use planning activities, and they have one person at the counter, and everybody else in their staffs is processing Major 37 claims. So if you recall the clock that I brought to you several weeks ago at this point, I wish I would have brought an alarm clock and had it here and be able to turn it so it would go off. Time is of the essence, Mr. Co-Chairs and members of the committee. At this point, counties still have the responsibility to process those applications. They are feeling the concern and the pressure to get those done. And what I'm hearing back from them, we're turning them out. We're not sure about the quality and the level of review that they have undertaken. And as a result, we're concerned about the land use applications that may be filed in the future based on those waivers that have been issued at this point. So that could compound, you know, Mr. Fisher's, that could compound the problem that we have, and also the litigation that has beset counties and the state at this point. So I just wanted to update you, as Mr. Shutterly did last week, on where counties are with regard to processing waivers.
Representative?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. One of the things in the framework discussion that is not agreed upon was the suggestion that the state take over processing Measure 37 claims. Do you have an opinion on that particular part of this framework?
Mr. Co-Chair's Representative Gerard, we have not had the opportunity to review this framework with our members at this point, so I'm not really in a position to respond to that. I would note, however, in one of the questions that I have based on the framework is that the state certainly has an interest in statute and administrative rules. And if the state was to take those over, that's one segment of the claims, but I would submit that there are probably other claims that the counties would still need to process that are based on local regulations, not on state statute and administrative rules, just as inside urban growth boundaries, cities and counties would still have a responsibility.
Thank you.
Senator.
Thank you. Mr. Slack, based on your testimony, I just want to affirm for clarity on the record. Based on your testimony, all the counties are continuing to process claims. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
There is a piece of mythology floating around, and I would like to correct it tonight, that some counties have basically stood down and stopped processing claims awaiting the outcome of the deliberations of this committee. From what I understand your testimony to be, that is simply not correct.
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, to my knowledge, all counties that still have Measure 37 claims outstanding are in the business of processing those. No county has stood down, if you will.
Thank you, sir.
I just have a comment to make. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wonder why we haven't done an extension for these previously. I mean, we could have done that in a separate bill earlier. I think we all agreed.
Well, I guess that's a discussion to have with the work group when we were talking about that, just as if we had or hadn't agreed. I was kind of taken back. I'm not sure if Representative Gerard's statement as to that we had not agreed to shift the state claims to the state, okay, leaving the local claims for the city and the counties. I thought that was one of the things that had been agreed to, but it sounds like maybe Representative Gerard differs on that. So we'll take that up on Thursday.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much.
You bet. All right, so let's move into our next panel. It's Jonathan Gracia, and let's see, Pam Hardy, and looks like Stephen Anderson, if I've got that right. Stephen B. Anderson.
Thanks for the statement.
Yeah. Ms. Hardy, why don't you go ahead and get started?
Thank you very much, members of the committee, for having public speak here tonight. I really appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I hope I'm able to get it into 2 minutes. First, I'd like to acknowledge that I am a land use attorney that represents public interest nonprofit organization Central Oregon Land Watch and neighbors that are challenging Measure 37 claims. However, no one is actually paying me here to be here tonight. I am here entirely in the hopes of actually making better law. Measure 37 appeared to address some very real concerns that citizens have. However, it had loopholes and ambiguities in it that no citizen could possibly have anticipated. I'm here to talk about one of those ambiguities in particular, and that's compensation. What is a reduction in fair market value? I know you've heard the detailed analysis of Bill Yeager of OSU, and I won't go into those details here. What I'd like to address is why Yeager's method of evaluation actually makes intuitive sense. It comes down to two things. The first is the old real estate adage that the first three rules of real estate are location, location, location. And the second one is that an actual reduction in fair market value is not the same as profits that are tempered by reasonable public interest. I have seen many, many Measure 37 claims come across my desk. And in almost, not every, but in almost every case, what I've observed is that these are people who have seen huge increases in the value of their land. If you look at the value of their land when they purchased it and the value of their land today, and you adjust that for inflation-adjusted dollars, there's a difference between a reduction in value and profits tempered by a reasonable public interest. In many cases, let me give you an example. If a chemical company, for example, one chemical company was relieved from regulation, that one chemical company would certainly be able to make more profits than anybody else. Just like in a Measure 37 claim, if one individual is able to be relieved from those regulations while everybody else remains regulated, that one individual is able to reap additional benefits and additional profits that no one else actually can.
Ms. Hardy, you're out of time.
I'm out of time?
You are. That first 30 seconds was just your introduction.
Can I tell? I would like very much to tell you about four very particular claims that all came across as one.
At this point, we've got your written testimony. Hopefully, it's in there. If not, you need to supplement it, because if I give you that much time to do that, everyone else who hasn't spoken and those who have already spoken would want it as well. So, I'm sorry, it won't happen tonight.
Good written testimony.
Yeah.
Right. Jonathan.
All right. I'm Jonathan Graysa of Hood River County. And I am working with Hood River Valley Residents Committee. We are a 501c3 nonprofit composed of about 175 families in Hood River County. I want to begin by applauding the Joint Committee on taking positive steps to fix Measure 37. You guys are doing a great job over the last couple of months. One thing that you've done is decrease the possible amount of homes. I spent a couple hours a few nights ago counting and found that there would be about 9,000 homes developed in Hood River County, which is the second smallest in Oregon. And when somebody called me to say, is that development going to happen that could build 40 homes next to me, I said, it probably won't, looking at this framework. Another thing I'd like to support is the idea of the cluster developments. I think that's another good idea of this framework. However, there's still ongoing concerns that I have. Farming is, of course, a very fragile business. In Hood River, it's our number one revenue producer. And if there's not 9,000 claims, the development numbers are still definitely creeping up. I'm not sure really how to say this, but fewer homes built due to Measure 37 means that there's a better chance for farming to continue and stay alive in the valley. Second is proof of loss. As Pam was just starting to mention, didn't quite get through it, but the Mickey Mouse valuation numbers need to be revised to a fair and equitable valuation. So that's all for my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. And Stephen?
Yes, thank you. My name is Stephen B. Anderson. I reside at 400 First Avenue in Mosier, Oregon. I've been a land use planner in Oregon and Washington for over 30 years. Measure 37 is one of the best things that's happened to the state in a long time. It recognized that the system is broken. I believe it needs to be abolished and replaced with one where creativity and innovation flourishes at the local level for addressing local land use issues. What the LCDC director proposed last week as a framework to amend Measure 37 is nothing more than a framework to kill Measure 37, which is tragic. I think the recent treatment of Representatives Garrard and Smith on the subcommittee is just as tragic. It shows the world that the name of this committee has not been honored. My hope is that the committee find some paddles and get its canoe turned around. What Measure 37 did was restore hopes and dreams to those landowners who have been treated unfairly by the state since 1973, and I would argue unconstitutionally. Should the legislature adopt the DLCD framework, it would be squashing those hopes and dreams flatter than a tortilla, to quote Karen Black. It would also be rejecting a potential for economic improvement this state hasn't experienced in decades. I would respectfully ask that the committee reverse course. Today is certainly not too soon. Thank you and appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. I am also submitting written testimony on behalf of another group from Hood River County, and that is the Hood River County, or the Hood River Agriculture, Forestry, and Landowners Association, that critiqued aspects of the framework that was presented on Thursday by DLCD and DOJ. It wasn't exactly the same because we didn't meet until Wednesday, and the hearing that you had was on Thursday, but it does contain a critique of some of those aspects of what was talked about, and I have brought the copies of that for you to study. If I've got a few minutes, maybe, how much time do I have left?
4 seconds.
Oh, you can have fun reading it. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Anderson, thank you very much, and if you'll turn that in, we'll make sure everyone gets it. All right. We're going to have another invited group up after this panel, so I just want to make sure that they're aware. The wine growers, Mr. Conklin, if you're around, I believe that you wanted to have an opportunity. So our next panel for right now will be Ken Maddox, Richard Holcomb, and it looks like David Jaquis. Your name, sir?
My name's Ken Maddox.
All right, Mr. Maddox. Thank you. Where are you from, sir?
From Hood River.
Wonderful. You can go ahead and get started.
My name is Ken Maddox. I live in Hood River, Oregon, 318 9th Street. Mr. Chairman, before I begin my testimony, I'd like to make a suggestion to you. It takes a while for these panels to turn over. I've noticed that there are a number of empty seats in the room, and it might be wise to sort of pre-cast who's going to be speaking so that people could gather here a little earlier and just improve the process.
Thank you for the suggestion.
You're welcome.
We got the next person who's going to be after this panel up against the wall now, so we'll bring
right.
them up there.
Okay. Okay.
All right, go ahead, sir.
First, I want to start by thanking you all, and particularly thanking the working group that met. My representative, Representative Smith, was a member of that working group, and I know you all worked long and hard, and I think fruitfully as well. With regard to the framework, this seems to me to be a very liberal piece. That is, the number of houses allowed on the express lane or and the number after that. I'd suggest a more conservative approach, which would be maybe one house on the express lane or fast track and perhaps five houses. The one conservative thing I do appreciate in the framework is the requirement that values be shown. That there be appraisals, there be some way of getting to value rather than asserting value, and particularly asserting value that's based on what could happen now in the absence of anybody else being able to develop. So I think that fairness needs to be part of the framework, and I'm glad to see that it is. And those are my comments.
Thank you very much. Let's see. I guess our next individual is Richard Holcomb, Mr. Holcomb.
I'm Richard Holcomb. I'm from Douglas County. Co-chairs Przanski and McPherson and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to make just a few comments. Again, some similar to what I've said other times when I've come here from Douglas County. In partnership with my brother, we operate about 3,000 acres there of the diversified farming operation of raising cattle, sheep, timber, hay, and prunes. So, the first thing I'd like to say is I really appreciate you guys working on trying to develop a fix for this whole situation. One concern I have is that the mention of high-value land and the protection of that, I think that's a good thing in this framework to really be addressing, but I think that there's a lot of land that will fall outside what would
technically be classified as high-value land that really needs some protection, because we don't know what the situation is going to be 20 years down the road in terms of the markets. And there, we've seen a lot of change in the history of the crops in Oregon, and particularly even in Douglas County over the past decades. So we really need to look at this high-value land issue and not give up the future of agriculture to development. And I think we need to continue to restrict the amount of homes that we allow each of these claimants to have. I think that in order to create fairness, we need to not create more problems for the neighbors around these people who have these claims. And in agriculture, that's a big concern. I'm glad to see you addressing the water issues. I think that there's a real lack of recognition on the sponsors of this measure that, in fact, as society becomes more complex, that we have to take care of our water. No one knows more acutely the need for water than farmers, and I know there's been some resistance even in farm groups to monitoring water usage, but it's a common sense issue, and we need to look at that. So I would encourage you to continue to address that issue.
Thank you, Mr. Holcomb.
Thank you.
And our last in this panel is Mr. Jaquist.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair Przanski and Co-Chair McPherson. I appreciate the opportunity. My name is David Jakes, for the record. That's kind of a tricky one.
Okay, and you're from where, sir?
I am from Douglas County as well.
Okay.
I reside in Winston. And I also am a chairman of the Douglas County Planning Commission, which is a volunteer position. I've been a part of that body for 11 years and have consequently worked through a wide variety of land use issues and dealing with the complex matrix of goals that were created by Senate Bill 100. I'd like to preface my remarks by saying that I think Senate Bill 100, where it was championed at its inception as being revolutionary, it certainly has been that, but that it would be a model for other states to follow in the future, this is something to date we have not seen. There are no other states that have a top-down land use system as cumbersome as that which we deal with in the state of Oregon. And I use that as a backdrop for my other remarks. I'd like to kind of reference an earlier statement I heard given in testimony about a perceived public interest on private lands. I would like to discourage any member of this panel from considering any such interest. I believe there is no such thing as a public interest on my private land, nor anyone else's private land. We talk about some of the preliminary goals of Senate Bill 100 as being preserving high-value farmland, and I think that it's ironic to me, as you look at the use of land around the state of Oregon, the one thing that we seem to have not really accomplished. And instead, through a complex matrix of goals, we have taken a lot of property and called it farm forest land, which is marginal secondary lands at best. In the state of Oregon, with 52% of the land in state or federal ownership, and another 45% or 44% tied up in a resource zone, we put an undue amount of strain on the limited lands that are left available for all purposes, whether it be commercial, residential, industrial development, and I think it's created a artificial pricing structure, which, as a licensed real estate broker, I might add, also is putting a tremendous pressure on new home buyers. And so I think that Measure 37 was a response that over a million people in the state of Oregon said, we want some equity. We would like to have some of our rights that we had lost restored to us, and I would encourage this body to do everything in your power to listen to the will of the voters and to uphold what their clear message was. We've heard a lot of...
And your time's up.
Time's up. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. All right. Mr. Conklin, you're going to be our next invited testimony for the wine growers. The next group that we're planning on calling up so they can make their way here is Marilyn Kittleman. It looks like Truth's Cronky. We need to find out where you're from. And then Gayla Harmar. It looks like Harmar. So, Mr. Conklin.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairs and members of the committee. My name is Gary Conkling. I'm appearing here tonight on behalf of the Oregon Wine Growers Association. As most of you know, the Oregon wine industry really is almost coexistent in the time it's been around with Oregon's land use system, and it's become an industry that generates more than $1.4 million in annual economic activity. And is a leader in the state in value-added agricultural production, in our view, because of the land use protection that our state has. We would like to express support for the framework as it's been presented. Measure 37 represents not only a hardship for existing winery and vineyard operators, but because we're in expansion mode, we're going to be needing future vineyard land. And so we find ourselves competing on hillsides with new lots. The framework, in our view, that the has been developed strikes a responsible balance between landowner rights and farmland protection. It recognizes landowner rights, in our view, without sacrificing valuable farmland, either directly or indirectly. A specific development right, plus the right of transferability to a successive owner, seems to us like a decent bargain, particularly compared to the land use waiver and the uncertain process through a land development process that claimants have to look at today. The framework also recognizes the value of farmland by limiting home sites on high-value farmland and in areas with groundwater restrictions. The definition of high-value farmland, we appreciate, contains prime lands that are within federally recognized American viticultural areas that have the proper exposure to the sun, elevation, and slope to become quality vineyards.
Marilyn, not quite yet.
We also think that the revised Measure 37 claims process envisioned in the framework will allow for a more orderly decision-making process, both for planners, for claimants, and for adjacent landowners. While we undoubtedly have members that would prefer to see Measure 37 repealed or more drastically modified, our association is willing to accept this framework as a fair and reasonable compromise, and we have a couple of additional suggestions I'll just briefly note. One, it seemed to us to be useful to make very clear that people with pending Measure 37 claims have the choice of either the express lane or a conditional path, or to establish that they have vested rights, and not to really have a fuzzy non-choice, something in the middle. In other words, it ought to be really clear that we've changed the process and what the process is and what paths they have. As the Oregon Farm Bureau indicated, we believe that existing right to farm provisions should be reaffirmed so there's no confusion when home sites are built in rural areas that they'll be subject to right to farm protections. And we would like to add our voice to those who believe that the framework should be enacted by this legislature. It should be put in place now with an emergency clause that gives landowners a fresh opportunity to secure a development right while at the same time not threatening farm operations. We appreciate the work you've put into this, and again, our view is that we think you're going in the right direction and would encourage you to proceed.
Thank you.
Are we getting that testimony in writing as well at some point?
I certainly can provide it, Mr.
That'd be great.
That'd be wonderful. We get the opportunity. All right, so our next public panel is going to be Marilyn Kittleman and Truths Crony. Kronke? Not here. And the other person was Gayla Harmar. Harner? Marilyn?
Co-Chairs Przanski and McPherson, and thank you for the committee for having us here today. And as Douglas County Commissioner Marilyn Kittleman, I thank each and every one of you for being here and for listening to us. And I've been on your side of the fence more than a few times at controversial meetings, and I know it's not always fun, and we do appreciate you being here and listening to each and every one of us. There's a temptation when you're in office, as each of you are and as I am, to do what we think is best for the people. And it's hard when we're in your situations, and right now we're facing the loss of the safety net, as you know. And so we're looking at some of those things. But, you know, it's never okay to go against the will of the people, even when you're doing what you think is best. More than a million people in Douglas, in Oregon, supported Measure 37. They know that we need reform to our land use laws. Douglas County, I want to give you a number, has processed 256 claims to date. We have 60 left to process, and they will each and every one of them be done by June 1st. There is no reason why the counties and the states cannot process these applications.
You said June 1st?
Yes. Okay. We'll have them done. We'll be done.
Deadline is actually May 2nd.
Oh, well, okay. And but you know what? We have about 6 extensions. So okay. Those are ones that we've negotiated in-house. So we'll be completely done June 1st. The public demands that we fix Oregon's oppressed land use regulations.
Right.
We've got to fix them some way. If we don't, they'll bring back another and another and another bill that you're going to get to fix. I want to encourage each and every one of you to uphold the will of the voters. I also want to bring to your attention an additional measure, House Bill 3285, which is under Representative Roblin's bill in the Ag Committee, which is a dwelling by right. And I want each and every one of you to please take notice of that. It would allow a dwelling on any piece of farm or forest land, 10 acres or over, that is a legally created parcel of land, and it will take care of a majority of these type of issues. It's a very simple, fundamental, basic right to a home on your property. It's a place to live. Even the governor has said that's what this was really all about. With more than 63% of Oregon now in state ownership, that's a new number we heard from Representative Susan Morgan last week, with more than 63% wrapped up in government ownership, we need some relief. We need relief from you guys, and not to gut Measure 37, but to help us get them processed. If counties need extra time, give them extra time. If the state needs it, give it to them. But we don't have high-value farmland in Douglas County. What we have is a lot of hills and valleys and a lot of secondary land that we need to put homes and other things on. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's see. Is it Truths?
Yeah. My name is Truths Kronke. I come from East Germany, and I got land use ingrained. I got the software ingrained in my brain. I've been through this whole thing already. My family lost their property when the liberators from Russia came and made everything socialistic over there. They took our property, they rented it out, and they, from the proceeds, they maintained the property for about 45 years. The only rights we had was that our name was still on the property. We were not even allowed to walk on our land. And when we got it back, it was all in shambles. But at least we got it back. Now I'm here, and I bought this property. And I realized right away when they came up with this LCDC that something is going to happen. So I divided 20 acres of my 330 acres for my sons so they could eventually build a house. I jumped through other hoops, building a road, septic approval, surveying, and all that stuff. And slowly, because I didn't have the money to build a house for my 10-year-old sons, I lost it. Now I applied again for my 37. Claim, spend another $10,000. I just wonder what's going to happen. Are we going to have to go through the whole rigmarole like East Germany did? I hope they can fix this problem before it all goes to hell. Thank you.
Thank you. And Gayla?
Yes. My name is Gayla Harner, and I live in Parkdale. I have a rural resident area. I bought my place in May 6, 1970, and I have 2.5 acres where I raised 4 sons. My husband put in 21 years in the Army, and he was put in for Vietnam in 1968, and to help us make a difference in where we live today, to make a difference when people vote that it means something for a land that is free. He was shot 7 times defending our USA. He lived in pain for a lot of years and finally died because of Vietnam. His retirement stopped when he died, and I need to sell part of my land so I can live. It was voted in by the people, and now some of you want to take it away, our rights. What did Phil die for? What do we vote for if it doesn't mean anything? Thank you.
Thank you. All right, our next panel is Victor, I believe it's Schmidt, and Jeannie, I don't know if it's Lowry, I can't tell if that's an L or a T, or Foray, and the other is Rita Swires. And then our next invited panel will be 1,000 Friends after this panel. So I'll tell you, the other people that will be coming up, that are still 100 miles out, these are will be the last two after that invited panel, is Mickey Killingsworth and Carla Bridges. Yes, Victor.
My ears are still recording.
And Victor, where are you from, sir?
I am from Corbett, down from Hood River. Man, okay. I don't know if I qualify under the 100 mile.
I'm looking to our Corbett expert. There.
75 miles to Corbett and 45 miles to Hood River. So 120.
Is that a thumbs up?
Yes.
Thumbs up.
I like.
She used to babysit him. Sorry.
Uh-oh.
I'll let him go.
Now we're going to hear the story.
He probably doesn't remember that.
I actually do. And I happily tell people that you used to be my babysitter, and they look at me and they think, it's not like the Kennedys, is it?
No. Remember that bear rug.
Okay, so others coming in, and Jeannie's here, and Rita.
Oh, Farley.
Yes. Wonderful. Thank you. All right, Victor, why don't you go ahead and get started?
I'll drift around to a number of things here.
About 2 minutes to drift.
Thank you. I really feel it's necessary to keep a perspective on Measure 37, and that Measure 37 is a fix for 101. 101 has a compensation clause in it that our legislature never had the guts to implement, and Measure 37 is a reaction to that. All of the problems and all of the considerations that were enumerated in the results from the committee can be handled under the existing Measure 37 issues under the compensation concept. And that's where we run into problems in money. There are issues here that reside in the concept of property rights. Property rights from people like my mother, who's 81 years old and owns property in the scenic area in the gorge, that in their minds there was never any question that they had. That generation and many of the people we're talking about, their investment was in the land. My mother put $6,000 into a piece of property in 58, and that was their investment. They paid off their mortgage early. These people should have a return on their investment. And there is no reason why they shouldn't have their return. Just anyone that has a 401k or any other investment in their lives shouldn't have a return. And I would like to see this compensation be available. If it's not available, then at least give them the option of doing something with their property. And I would actually like to see Measure 37 expanded and this legislature give, for instance, the scenic area people the same rights that everyone else has.
Mr. Smith, you're
thank you.
Thank you. Gene? And I'm sorry, I didn't pronounce your last name.
Farwig.
Farwig. Thank you.
My name is Jean Farwig, and I appreciate you allowing me to speak. I'm from Hood River County also. I live on a orchard, and my husband provides quite a few houses for people, but many of the farms in Hood River Valley have quit housing the employees because of all of the regulations that they have. And I'm also a real estate broker, and I have developed properties so that there would be some affordable housing in Hood River for some of the workers. And at this point right now, there's nothing zoned so that we can afford to have affordable housing. And I feel that it's a real necessary item to have. And I feel also that people, I've represented people who have built homes. They bought their house or their property in 64 and built a home on it. And this gentleman had four sections and had it put into four lots at that time and got a permit to build it, the house. And his son almost finished the house, and then the Planning Commission decided to change the rules and said it had to be an auxiliary farmhouse. And that house has sat empty for many years. They finally remodeled it and are renting it right now. The owner wanted me to sell it for him, but the county put a little sign on there saying illegal farmhouse on the legal title, so we weren't able to. They could buy it, but nobody could get financing on it because of that clause. And so I do feel that it's really important that we have property that we can develop. And I did like it when the county was in charge and they were just going to move the urban growth boundary out a little bit so that housing would be in the same area rather than having its little developments scattered out throughout the county. But
Ms. Farwick.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Rita, your last name?
Thank you for hearing me. I brought my pajamas tonight. I drove 100 miles. I really want to be heard. My name is Rita Swires, and I live in the beautiful Hood River Valley. I was a war bride in World War II. I am 81 years old. I have 41 grand, great, and great-grandchildren. I have not filed a Measure 37 claim. I am not concerned about my neighbors that have filed. I believe we are blessed to live in America. It is easy to get caught up in detail and ignore the big picture. I fear that is what has happened here. It appears the bills before you tonight were created to destroy Measure 37. You may even have the votes to do just that. I pray that you will rethink this issue if that is your mission. Measure 37 was designed to correct an error that was made 34 years ago. The original Senate Bill 100 included compensation to those who lost land values. The administering agency did not honor that directive. It is way past time to correct that violation of property rights in Oregon. I have to apologize. This has kind of come on me with age, and I shake. But believe me, I can get through this if you can. The voters did know what they were voting for. There are only 7,000 Measure 37 claimants in the whole state. This is a very small number of people, yet 61% of Oregon voters supported Measure 37. 37 claims represent 0.8% of the land in the state of Oregon. And that means that 99.2% of the land is not impacted by this measure. All 37 claims average one house on 12 acres. It would make so much sense to allow these claimants to create prosperity for the state. It would not damage our communities. It would make you, our legislators, look really good. It would create more tax dollars to provide services. You would not have to take responsibility for any negative results. I know that you must consider pressure from friends, groups, and people like me. Have you ever noticed that the friends never have anything to lose in these battles? They can be very busy pushing their agenda, but they have made no investment. The 37 claimants have a huge investment.
Ms. Waters.
Pardon?
Your time has passed.
Thank you very much for hearing me.
You bet. Thank you very much for being here. I will be asking people not to show their emotions. We're going to be having testimony from both sides and trying to move stuff forward. We now have the representatives from 1,000 Friends that are going to be giving their testimony as invited testimony. And our last two people that will be testifying that are over 100 miles will be Mickey Collinsworth and Carla Bridges when we finish this panel.
Mr. Co-Chair, as members of the committee, for the record, I'm Daniel Eisenbeis, Legislative Affairs Director for 1,000 Friends of Oregon, and I'm joined here this evening by Bob Stacey, also of 1,000 Friends.
Good evening.
Thank you for the opportunity to comment on this framework proposal. I need to offer our comments with the caveat that without seeing the actual bill language, it's difficult to comment on a full proposal. As Mr. Honeycutt put it, the devil is in the details. And I would like to thank all of you for your tremendous amount of work on this and hearing from citizens all over the state. I imagine that each of you has received thousands of contacts from citizens around the state. And you're facing a monumental job to fix the mess that we know as Measure 37. This framework is a step in the right direction. It recognizes that fairness cannot be achieved by treating any single property owner as if their property exists in a vacuum, that fairness must be achieved in the context of all Oregonians. To that end, we have the following suggestions. One home should be allowed outright per tract for personal use. Should guarantee someone's homestead right. However, any additional development should be limited to an amount that compensates for actual demonstrated loss in value. And upon compensation, you should require an easement in exchange for that compensation so that the public is actually getting receipt for something that they're in effect purchasing. You should also expressly prohibit subdivisions, commercial development, and industrial development. Measure 37 was not meant for speculators and developers. It was meant for average Oregonians. Moving forward, we'd recommend that you not handcuff the power of communities around the state to regulate for changing circumstances, but rather to make sure that our notice procedures are improved, and they have been greatly improved in recent years, and to offer a one-year grace period for new regulations that are not adopted on an emergency basis. And we urge you to pass legislation that takes effect immediately. Aside from the potential huge taxpayer liability that Mr. Schlack alluded to, neighbors of claimants around the state are facing uncertainty of their own, whether it's personal in nature or business in nature. And they need to have certainty restored to them, and we need to act before irreparable harm occurs on our natural resource lands that power our rural economy. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Stacey, did you have some comments?
Mr. Chair, co-chairs, no, I have nothing to add to Dan Eisenbeis's observations except that I've learned over 36 years I look smarter with my mouth shut.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Still looking good. All right. Well, we've got Mickey Killingsworth and Carla Bridges.
I'm Carla Bridges. I'm from Powell Butte. And I want to say that I think that this framework is heading in the right direction. My husband Mike and I live in a community that proudly boasts to be home of good crops, good stock, good neighbors. Powell Butte is located in Central Oregon. The community consists of a church, school, post office, and county store. We've been here since the 1980s. We raise cattle, horses, and goats. We are now being threatened. Crook County has two large resorts they've allowed into Powell Butte, and three more are working on proposals. To add to that, 89 Measure 37 filings have been turned into the county, and all but one is for planned unit developments. My neighbor is one of these. The owners of this property are two elderly retired couples who have already been allowed to partition in the past. They originally owned 440 acres of prime farmland until in the 1990s, the county for some reason waived all land regulations, providing them with the ability to partition all of their property. They then sold off all but this last 125 acres, which is in four tax lots. All of this unchecked growth adversely affects the school, water, taxes, roads, livelihoods, lifestyles, and the environment. Allowing these developments to surround and eventually overtake farms and ranches will have a huge impact on us and the agricultural industry, especially all the wells needed for golf courses and developments. Water is an issue in Central Oregon. We have worked hard to make a future for ourselves, and that future has always been here. Now with Measure 37, an entire generation of retirees overcome with greed can destroy that. There is a criminal act known as reckless endangerment, and that is just what these people are guilty of. They are being reckless with our futures because they won't live to see the damage it causes, and they are endangering other people's way of life and the future of agriculture in Oregon. If the idea of cutting up 18,244 acres of prime farmland in Powell Butte alone for resorts and houses isn't criminal, then I don't know what is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairs and committee members, I'm Mickey Killingsworth from Madras, Oregon. You have my map. I am here for Gary Harris. So I guess I'm the keeper of the map when you're done. I'm representing Jefferson County Farm Bureau, and Gary can be here tonight, so I'm going to be a poor substitute, but I'm going to stay on task. Mainly our Farm Bureau has been meeting ever since Measure 37 has became law. Every month when we meet, we spend the majority of our Farm Bureau meetings talking about Measure 37. It consumes most of our Farm Bureau meetings. We are mainly concerned about the language in the work plan, the new proposal, on high value. What is high-value agriculture, the definition? And I was here last Thursday, and some of you may have heard me shriek and said, no, our North Unit Irrigation District is doomed if high-value has to be prime soils, one, two, and with water. And everybody says, oh, you have water. You have irrigation water. You're okay. That is not correct. In North Unit Irrigation District, there's 50,000 acres that is irrigated. Out of that, there are class 3 and 4 soils, even with the water right. They are not classified as high value. So here we looked at what you have offered for the wine industry to protect the vineyards, and we think North Unit Irrigation District project deserves the same type of consideration and protection. One reason is we're a federal project. Everybody who took water in on that project did so as farm ground. It was all known when the project came in. You signed up as farm, did it as farm ground, not as subdivisions, farm ground. It's a federal project. It is very important that everybody understand we produce 80% of the carrot seed, the baby carrots, or as we call cut and peel carrots, for the United States, over 60% of the world carrot seed supply. We also raise over 80% of the peppermint tea leaf. So it is... That is our main concern here tonight, is to make sure that when you look at the North Unit Irrigation District, you realize that that needs protected, as well as the wine industry. And there's going to be lots of people in different areas. There are 7 key agriculture areas in Oregon. And the Willamette Valley, yes, is probably the highest productivity and the most valuable. But those of us who live in North Unit, we have just put a liability on ourselves to fund for conservation practices, relining our canal for millions of dollars. And if Measure 37 is not fixed, the trickle-down effect will be we will be out of business because of the irrigation system and how it works. And we have a bill at the federal level going from the Senate to the House seeking a special legislation to allow North Unit to continue with some funding with some conservation joint projects to save water rights and be more efficient. We have been noted as one of the most efficient irrigation systems in the United States. So we hope you can recognize that in your language and protect us. And I'm sorry I'm a poor substitute for Gary Harris, but I will say one thing. Go Beavers.
Thank you very much. All right, so let's see. Our next panel is going to be Martha Pellegrino and, let's see, Ken Clark. and looks like Glenn Stonebrick. When you're ready.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martha Pellegrino with the City of Portland. I have submitted a letter from Mayor Tom Potter, and I will not read that into the testimony into the record today, but I would like to make just a few points to the committee. One is Portland is in a bit of a unique situation for cities, and we are more akin to what Mr. Schlack was discussing in terms of where counties being under the gun. In Portland, we have 92 claims currently valued at over $260 million. Some of these claims are for homes and for residential dwellings, and many are not. Some of the non-residential claims we have include very large and complex commercial and industrial claims, in addition to the 24 claims for signs and billboards. To the extent that the framework limits claims to residential developments inside the UGB, we are definitely supportive of that concept. And as others have stated, certainly need to see details, but to the extent that the work group has identified that, we appreciate it. We've been working very hard to resolve a number of the claims, and I would say 8% of folks in the city who filed claims have now withdrawn them because we've actually worked out solutions. But we encourage this committee and to continue their hard work and appreciate your consideration of the of claims to the UGB. Thank you.
Thank you. Ken.
Yeah. My name is Kim Clock. I'm from Wilsonville, Oregon. I represent myself and my three brothers. I guess right off the top, what a legacy. We're being equated, Oregon's land use laws are being equated with the Eastern Bloc countries by a former resident. Interesting. I was baptized in Oregon's land use more than 30 years ago, and I've been immersed in it ever since. During that time, I've witnessed a lot of land use. I understand perfectly how and why Measure 37 was embraced by voters. When the citizens of this state passed Measure 37 by a landslide, some members of government, along with other opponents of the measure, apparently thought, "Forgive them, Lord, for they know not what they do. We must teach these lost souls to find the way again." Nothing could be so patronizing or so polarizing as this legislative effort to modify the will of the people. The so-called proposals for better Measure 37. There is talk of making 37 work better, express lanes, up to 3 home sites, at least 1 home site for most, maybe 10, maybe 30. But then comes the darkness. The talk of preservation of high-value resource land, fragile water supplies, home site formulas, further documentation requirements, the darkness of conditions, the conditional darkness of government, if you will. This is exactly why Measure 37 passed to begin with, and this is why it should stand as it is without further government interference. There's not one shred of evidence that Measure 37 would have any significant impact on the amount of high-value resource land in Oregon. What is high-value resource land? Would it be the prime Willamette Valley farmland, formerly known as Damish, that the state just sold to Via Boy developers in Wilsonville? Would it be the prime farmland that the state just constructed the Coffee Creek prison on in Wilsonville? Would it be the prime farmland, the Damascus boring area, that was just approved by Metro for intensive development? Would it be the hundreds upon hundreds of acres of prime farmland up and down the fertile Willamette Valley that the state and local governments have financed and practically gifted to foreign and domestic high-tech firms, some who barely stayed long enough to open their doors? Where is the Committee on Government Land Use Ethics when you need them? The hard, cold truth is Oregon's land use law and practice, and I emphasize practice, has never been much about protecting high-value resource land. Instead, it has been all about control. About how government, I only have another sentence.
Okay.
About how government and a certain entourage of elite citizens who ride in their wake can use regulation to control the private property of others without payment for it. This is called de facto ownership without responsibility, and it is as addictive as meth. the fact that Measure 37, alteration or nullification, are even being agenda items in this legislature is a measure of just how strong the addiction to it is.
Thank you. Glenn.
Glenn Stonebrink, Rickerell, Oregon. Senate Bill, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 588 creates an ombudsman to negotiate claims between the landowners and the government. However, this person has to be appointed by LCDC, and members of the LCDC are appointed by the governor and approved by the Senate. In a sense, the same people are going to have to be that would pass this bill. Now, Black's Law Dictionary says that this person is one who stands between and represents the citizens before government. I would think it would almost be a joke. That person has to be approved by the very body that enforces the LCDC laws. Senate Bill 588 addresses only single-family dwellings, and yet this bill would abolish ORS 197 that deals with a lot more than single-family dwellings. It's property rights. The on page 3, line 29, the government says that if they would basically allow the state to steal 20% of the land before compensation would even be talked about. I didn't find 20% figure in our U.S. Constitution or the Oregon Constitution. It says the landowner is not eligible for compensation if the government decides it is reasonably necessary to carry out federal law. Now, this is ridiculous because the state does not carry out federal law unless it's specifically spelled out in the U.S. Constitution. Land use law doesn't appear in the U.S. Constitution. It goes on to talk about endangered species and so on. There's enough in this to basically deny any claim for any reason you might want to. If you were to get to the claim process, the fair market value is the amount that the land was worth when the rule or the law was passed, with a small amount of interest. That's far cry from the real market value of And it says that compensation will be paid only if monies are appropriated and available. And yet, it talks about appropriating one that restricts payments to $1 in 2007.
Glenn, the 2 minutes are up.
Can I just conclude?
Well, it's not going to be as long as that last sentence I heard on the last one.
The last sentence. Basically, this bill is a clear case of prostitution of our Constitution.
All right, thank you very much. Our next panel is Ralph Johnson, Ann Littlewood, and Cat Stevens. But I don't think it's famed Cat Stevens I was just thinking about. It is. We'll have a little music. Maybe we need a little music right now. Can you do Peace Train now? Or Kumbaya? All right. Why don't you go ahead and get started?
I'm Ralph Johnson from Newburgh. And I was here last Thursday during the meeting with the LCDC when they made their presentation. And it distressed me to hear them suggest that they handle all 37 claims. With their statutory power and past performance, Measure 37 would basically be stopped. There was nothing mentioned about applicants that have been approved and started the process of getting final approval. The cost of surveys, engineers, hydrologists, and many fees can be devastating to somebody retired and living on a fixed income. Do they have to sell their home? Or will our state graciously reimburse them for their costs and many hours on the phone coming to these meetings, and to say nothing of all the midnight oil that's been burned? I wrote this at 4 o'clock in the morning. I have to feel sorry for those people who are fighting for freedom in Iraq when it appears that it may be losing it here in Oregon. I was in the paratroops during World War II. When I came home to Oregon 61 years ago, my vote counted. My only hope now is that my vote still is counted. Please leave Measure 37 alone. Thank you.
Thank you. Kat?
I'm Kat Stevens, and I live in Columbia County. And I looked at your framework tonight I got it and looked at your framework, and I don't see that it resembles Measure 37 as was voted in on by 61% of the people. I want to know who is going to share your retirement income with me. I have dreams and hopes that should be a reality. I'm serious. I ask you, do you have dreams that are going to be possible with your retirement income? The Social Security I live on is near poverty level. We bought our property in 1968. It's 23 acres, and at that time we could break it up into whatever we wanted. We did not. We saved it for retirement. And in 1999, we still could have broken it up into 2 acres, but we didn't know that until after the fact. Both my husband and I worked for PG Enron. We had a terrific retirement, and we would have been able to hold on to this land. And the Enron thieves took every bit of our retirement except $2,400. So now we have our land. This is all we have, is our land. And we don't have savings like some of you might have. And thieves come in different sizes, in different colors, and different verbal language. Whether it is in the name of 1,000 Friends of Oregon or the law, you, the opposition, say we don't deserve to cash in. This is our investment. It is the same as your investments. Embracing thievery is when you try to steal what is rightfully someone else's.
Ms. Stevens, you're over 2 minutes.
Am I up already?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. My land is my investment. Okay. Freedom comes with a price. Your voice, that you are protecting our future generations' lands. I say I am willing to protect future generations with freedom and democracy, a legacy of future generations' rights to vote and have it count. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, our next panel is going to be Richard Tabell, I believe, and Will Neuhauser, it looks like, and Deborah
Delbert.
Delbert. Boy, I can't tell that one. Oh. Delbert, if you're here, hopefully there's not too many Delberts. Cannot make up a last name, sorry. And regarding tonight, we're going to go a little bit after 8, so probably about 8:15 or so is where we're going to be closing our public hearing for tonight. So for those who can take less than 2 minutes, that will allow more people to be able to testify. When you're ready.
Will Neuhauser, with the chair of the Nature Conservancy and Oregon Board. Co-chairs and committee persons, thank you very much for giving us this opportunity. The mission of the Nature Conservancy in Oregon is, in short, to preserve the diversity of life in Oregon by protecting the places that give Oregon its unique character. Let me give you an example of our challenge. In 1927, when Oregon school children selected the western meadowlark as the state bird, I heard it was estimated that 90% of those children heard the western meadowlark regularly on their way to and from school. Today, few children in the Willamette Valley have ever heard it going to and from school. If I may, I'll play that song now to remind us of our state bird, since it's so rare in the Willamette Valley now. Many other plants and animals have managed better than the western meadowlark, but face continued threats from dwindling and fragmented habitats. Under Measure 37, this situation will get worse quickly. Working in Oregon since 1961, the Nature Conservancy has over 22,000 members across the state. We employ staff in 14 counties and protect 48 preserves. The Conservancy is a major land stakeholder in Oregon. Altogether, we own or help manage or have helped protect nearly 500,000 acres in Oregon. So the Nature Conservancy understands and respects property rights. Polling shows Oregonians want strong land use laws and respect for private property. This requires compromise to provide balance. We support the framework because we believe it is a fair compromise in addressing our major concerns, including large-scale developments, speculative appraisals, and groundwater supplies, while protecting basic property rights of owners and the ability to build more homes on their property. Thank you for your work on this matter.
Thank you. Richard?
Delbert.
Hawk Great. Street. Thank you.
Hawk Street.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
And say again your name.
Delbert Hawksbury.
Hawksbury. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, most of what I was going to say has already been said on land use laws and so forth. I would ask of the panel to review what got us here. It's been a real road, bumpy one. We're talking about high-valued farmland, and just here recently, a fellow had like 5 acres. Right across the stream from him was a rock-crushing plant. He had 3 dogs, Labradors, he was using for raising puppies. Nice facilities, everything's right. High-value farmland was a rock pile. He was doing what he did best for that land. He could not have those dogs on there because it was in the wrong zoning. And that's the problem with a lot of our issues here today. Simple little things like that we couldn't even get over. Why weren't those corrected over all of these years? Now we've got a mess of 37. Now we've got a problem. They were not addressed as they came along. I testified one time before, and I'll tell you how some of these things occurred. We get down to the 11th hour on our counties and had to do our zoning work. Well, we didn't quite get her done, so what we did, we put a map up in a wall. We draw a line down a county road, and one side was one zone, and the other side was the other. Those things were never corrected. We have high-valued farmland as a rock pile. And that's throughout this state. It's not here in this county. It's fallacies throughout in this zoning system that we've got. We need to correct that. 37 goes away. We've got to get it corrected, what got us here. And that's what everyone is asking in this room, in every individual way.
Thank you very much. Our next panel is Elaine Newland, Judy Messner, and 16, 17, Wayne Stevens.
Hi, I'm Elaine Newland, and I'm from the West Lynn area. I'm familiar with land use rules because I've been involved with the CPO for Clackamas County area. We've lived there for 30 years. It's in a rural area, zoned farm and timber. It's situated over a basalt aquifers where we all put our wells in. There's been trouble with some of the wells going dry already. There is a lot of the land up there is in Measure 37 claims because it had large landowners from the 60s and 70s. Currently, there's a subdivision being proposed. It's before the hearings officer now. It's phase one of a three-phase, 110 homes. This is going to all be putting wells into our basalt aquifers, and the state hydrologist has told us that these aquifers do not get replenished with water. It's a very slow rate, so we're all in there with our straws in this historic water. Clackamas County does not have special planning for subdivisions in rural areas. The subdivision, all the ordinances and processes are for cities kind of subdivisions. They say the water problems and the chemical pollution problems are to be taken care of some other agencies like the water resource. They are not taking any stand to be involved on the problems of water. They don't deal with subdivisions in rural areas.
Ms. Newland, your time is
okay.
At
one
end.
More. Your new bill must contain language that severely restricts development of groundwater limited in critical areas, and it should grant authority to identify these areas to the Oregon Water Resource Department.
Thank you, Ms. Okay. Newland. Next.
Hi. I'm Judy Messner, and I'm from West Lynn, rural West Lynn also. I'm speaking for my husband, John, and me. We urge you to approve framework for better Measure 37 now. Incidentally, the framework that I read was dated March 29th. I don't know if that's the one you're still working off of.
It has evolved a little bit.
I'm thinking March 29th. I hope I'm still with you.
The main elements are the same, but there are a few changes.
Particularly, we want protection for areas with limited groundwater, no more than 3 home sites per claim. We live in the rural area near West Lynn called Peace Mountain, just down the road from Elaine. It has a basalt aquifer, which the Oregon State Water Resources Department defines as a groundwater limited area. Our groundwater supply is limited and declining based on current usage, according to the state. Yet neither State Water Resources nor Clackamas County has the authority to deny Measure 37 large-scale development in our area. This Measure 37 map that I passed out is behind my testimony. Highlights our area. It's a sub. Highlighting our area is a subset of the map that was published by Clackamas County in January. There are approximately 350 new 1-acre home sites that have been requested within the yellow circle of the roads there. There are no more than 120 homes there now. The first Major 37 subdivision plan for this area calls for 41 home sites on 62 acres. The hearings officer told us she plans to deliver a ruling May 21st. 5 weeks from today, it's possible that construction will begin. As the law stands now, development can continue until our wells run dry and the state steps in to shut off users in priority order. Last in, first out. That's like putting locks on your doors after your house has been robbed. And we need you, the legislators, to stop this insanity. Our time is running out fast, as will our water, if you don't stop it. Please pass the framework document as soon as possible. If you must delay, at least pass a moratorium on all subdivision applications in areas with limited groundwater.
My name is Wayne Stevens. I'm from St. Helens, Oregon. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm kind of lost for words here. I thought I lived in the United States of America, a free country, democracy. All I'm hearing is a bunch of crybabies crying about what they like or don't like. What we're talking about here is the rights of American majority that says something's going to happen, it should happen. The initiative system is about the people saying, we don't like what you did to our laws. You took our rights away. That's our retirement. We just want to be grandfathered in. And if you change this law in any way, you're I better than a thief that breaks into my house. You're stealing from me. And I want, it's like your PERS. Now, when you change your PERS, did you go back to when you started work? Oh, no. You grandfathered yourself in. That's all the people want. And this is fair to everybody. No matter when you buy your land, you're grandfathered in. It's like a septic system. It doesn't change. It's grandfathered in. Your building permits, your electrical, all that stuff, when you buy a place, it's grandfathered in. That's all we want is our property grandfathered in. If you guys think that you got voted in, you're the big dogs now, I'll tell you, there's a lot more little dogs out here that are getting tired of the big dogs making all this big noise and your friends with you. Thank you.
All right, our next panel will include Greg Malinkowski, I believe. and Don Dean and Kathleen Carl. All right. Who do we have at the table?
Don Dean.
Kathleen Carr.
All right. Kathleen, why don't you go first, and Don, you go second.
Okay. Thank you for letting me speak. I applaud trying to fix some of the ambiguities of Measure 37. For 90 years, my family has farmed in what is now nearly 500 acres near Woodburn. For 33 years, we have worked under a social contract that allowed us as farmers to make investments. We do make investments, despite what somebody said, for our future, knowing that our land was protected. I feel now that we are threatened and that we who have followed the rules for the past 33 years are not equal, do not have equal rights. I support the express lanes for one or two houses, and I think that would take care of a lot of people who spoke tonight about their needs. I do believe that anyone who bought land after 1994 expecting to develop it was not reading our laws and wasn't paying attention to them at all, and I actually would make it earlier. I think large subdivisions and commercial development should be prohibited in the EFU zones. My mother, who's dead now, planted over 15,000 trees on our farm, and I know just having people, a development down from our farm, that we're always trying to watch people come in, go into the woods, start fires, things like that. For me, transferability is just saying let's pass this land on until we develop it. I do realize that are some people that are very old and they have not been able to do this, and that I like the time limit. So I guess if you're going to have transferability, I like the time limit on it. I wish it was shorter. I do think appraisal is necessary. I know Senator George spoke about that, but I do believe, I know our own accountant for our farm made a huge claim for the amount for some land near Woodburn, and I can't believe that it's worth that much. So there has to be some accountability for that. A number of years ago, my sister and I went through Germany, West Germany, and we were amazed at how they preserved farmland for hundreds and hundreds of years, and it was still there because they had worked to preserve it, and I believe that that needs to be done. Thank you.
Don?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for letting me speak tonight. I won't speak individually on the issues of the framework. I'd just like to say that I like the direction that it's going. As a side, I am a neighbor to a proposed 217-acre subdivision. I would like to encourage you to give consideration in limiting the development in water-sensitive areas, which I believe you've addressed already, and continue to disallow subdivisions and commercial enterprises. I also urge you to act promptly. Time is of the essence here, because I know in my personal case, the developers are waiting at the gate with their heavy equipment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is it Greg Malinkowski?
Greg Malinkowski.
Great.
I thank you folks for taking the time. I know you've heard quite a bit tonight. I'll try and be really, really fast here. I'm surprised. Of course, I'm up in an urban area, up by Portland, or pretty close to it. And what I see is a lot of folks bought fields and forests and wetlands, and with the idea that they were going to convert them to something else. I've got to tell you that there are a lot of neighborhoods in Portland where if I bought a house and tore it down and put in a Quickie Mart, the neighbors would come after me with torches and pitchforks. Because they expected that neighborhood to, they expected when I bought the house I could fix it up. But I wouldn't go ahead and change it that radically. I think that's an important issue. In our particular area, we have a water right. We're told that our water right, if the well drops 15 feet, then we're done irrigating. That's the end of us. What I'm going to tell you is that
If you allow 500 new wells in the general vicinity of our farm, even if we don't use the water at all, what if it drops 15 feet? And the truth of the matter is we are going to use it because that's what we do to stay in business. And I don't know how in the world you can expect us, how we would tell that it was the new 500 wells that did it. I can tell you, too, that we have high-value farmland, even though officially you guys don't think so. It's Class 3. The guy's growing vegetables on it, 6 acres, $80,000 gross. How much more high value at over 10,000 acre does ground have to be before it's high value? I'm sorry it's Class 3, but we're doing all right on it. In looking at this, I would recommend that you allow up to 3 houses. Most of the really sad stories we heard today would be fixed if folks could do up to 3 more units. If they're going to do more than 3 units, I do think they need to cluster them so that the resources are preserved as much as possible. I also would like to say, you know, I thought Douglas County needed more timberland, but it sounds like they think they need less timberland. Things I've learned today. So I just wanted to tell you that what I see here is very good. I think I would tighten it up a little bit. Actually, in our area, the zoning's been in place since 86. Everybody's bought since then, knows about it. In addition, I would just make it smaller than that and as little as possible. Give these poor folks who are on the edge a little something, but protect it for the rest of us as well. And we would appreciate it. And I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Our next panel is Jack Merriman, Gerald Freeman, and Ron Hutchinson. Makes it very
Challenge me.
All right. Who'd like to start?
Co-chairs, committee members, my name's Ron Hutchison. Thank you for addressing the travesties and the unfairness created by Major 37. As you work toward the solutions, I urge you to also keep your vision on the future of Oregon and not be swayed by developers or others that are motivated by their personal windfall of profit. There's so much more at stake here, and someday I hope you'll be able to look back and say, we had the courage and the foresight to act for the good people, for the people of Oregon, for the good of the environment, and for the future of the state of Oregon. My wife and I live on a piece of rural property in Yamhill County on which we have placed a conservation easement. 2 of our neighbors have filed Measure 37 claims. One is for 50 homes, and the other is for 40 homes or commercial development. These residential subdivisions and commercial developments will be smack in the middle of valuable, productive farmland. And if these residential subdivisions and commercial developments are allowed to go forward, the already struggling wells in the community will most likely go dry and cause further stress and hardship on the neighbors in the area. Our property values will greatly drop. The gravel roads, fire protection, police officers, schools, and other services and systems will be overburdened. The agricultural productivity will be lost forever. The tax burden for services and improvements will be placed squarely on the shoulders of the rest of us. If we're not going back to the voters for a revote on Measure 37, I make the following 2 recommendations. I encourage you to allow landowners to build the one house they could have built when they bought their land. 2, prohibit Measure 37 claimants from building residential subdivisions and commercial and industrial developments, period. As you right the wrongs of Measure 37 and address the inequities it has created, not to mention the ever-growing number of lawsuits and all the other implications it will bring, I urge you to please reinstate fairness throughout the state of Oregon. And as you go forward in your consideration of changes, refinements, and improvements to and of the law, may you also make the framework even more stringent than the current recommendations call for.
2 minutes are up.
One more sentence. And always keep in mind the preservation and protection of the landscapes, the farming communities, the timber, the wildlife, and the open spaces of this unique and wonderful place on earth that we call Oregon. Thank you.
All right. Gerald?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me. My name is Gerald Freeman. I live in Rick Rial, Oregon. And my grandfather bought our farm in 1928, and I live in the house on the farm that I was born in. I've watched the land use develop through the years, and I've heard all kinds of accusations of what goes on in the farm community. One is limited water. When we moved into since I've lived in the area, which is a couple of years, 71 years, we've always had limited water in our area. But what has happened in the last 15 or 20 years? The well drilling has improved. We have water coming in every direction within a mile of our farm. And we live in the Rick Rial area, which is a long ways from any town. We have a mile, the water comes in a mile from the north, it comes in a mile from the south from our house, and it comes in a mile from the east. So water is being delivered to all places in our area that's had limited water. When I was growing up, we took a bath once a week. We had no water. On the farm we live on now, it is we have a spring, and it's never had any problems throughout the years. It's in a limited water use area, and it is not diminished at one iota, which is West Salem, so you know. And it has not diminished one iota from these years. The other place we lived on was on a spring also, but you had no water in the summer. So limited water supplies are not what you're hearing them to be. My sister lives on a Parent Mountain, which another speaker just spoke on. They moved there in the 80s, and they have a well. Parent Mountain has grown considerably.
Mr. Freeman.
I thought they had stopped the growth in that area. But she has water. She has a well and still has water. But it's a limited water area. People are drilling wells and getting water in that area.
Thank you very much. All right. Let's see. Martha Arnett. John Messner. And Carl Lee Johnson. You go and get started.
I'm Martha Arnett. I live in Woodburn. I own farmland for 38 years. I lost a husband. I had two children to raise. I wanted to divide the land, but the measure you had in there kept me from doing so. And it caused me a loss in my retirement and the help for taking care of the children. The people of Oregon have voted 37, giving us back our property rights. There may be a few little tweaks that need to be taken care of, but we, the people, have spoken. And I don't feel it's fair that McCall's Bill 100 stole from me, and now you want to change Measure 37. Why change the voice of the voters? If private property rights are taken or deleted, we're going to have land kept well like it was in Germany, under people's names, but not their property. And we end up being a dictatorship, either by leaders or by cities. Thank you, sirs.
Thank you. Carly.
Hi, I'm Carly Johnson, and I live in Scotts Mills, Oregon. And my family came to Oregon in 1854. One of them came across the plains, and the other came around the Horn. And I sleep in a bed that came around the Horn because it was too big to come across the plains. That's my background. So property rights have been in my family a long time. Oregon has been in my family a long time. And I'm sorry, I'm not limited to the testimony that you had, this, the pathway things. I didn't receive that until today. And I just came to support my friends. My friends in the Woodburn area want to sell some property. And you folks are going to try and limit that. And you're messing with things. And I don't like it. And, you know, we've had the people speak. And you guys got elected in. And now you're going to mess with what they've spoken about. And so I just came down to tell you that please don't mess too much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bernard Newland, Ernest Godfrey, Marlene Godfrey.
Good evening. My name is Bernard Newland. I live in West Lynn, Oregon. From my perspective, what we're looking at with Measure 37 is a sea change in regulation. But I'd like to remind the committee that government regulations are put in place for the benefit of a greater society, not for specific interests. The most obvious examples are the banking laws and the regulation of the sales of investment securities. I'd like to point out that without regulation of these industries, there would be a collapse in the financial markets of the United States. I think it would be beyond belief to look at financial services in the USA without regulation. Unfortunately, whenever regulations are changed, there's an opportunity for special interest groups, especially greedy special interest groups, to gain large financial advantage. I believe that Oregon land use planning was established for the greater good of all Oregonians, not just for special groups. It assured the community that development was controlled and that sewer, water, traffic, schools, and other elements of community infrastructure was available for new development. It assured Oregonians that their existing livable environment would be preserved as the population grew. This last paragraph is exactly what the city of West Lynn said to me when I applied for Measure 37, and my Measure 37 claim was approved. But it's a penalty because I wish it were not, and I wish Measure 37 never, ever happened. Because we have sewer problems, we have water problems, we have traffic problems, we have schools which have to be increased. As I listen to other people come up here and claim that they bought their land to divide it, I say baloney. I bought my land because it was a nice place to live. Anybody who bought their land 30 to 40 years ago or 100 years ago with their ancestors bought it to farm or they bought it to live on. People are now claiming special interests or special advantage because they say it's their pension liability. I don't go back to my investments, good and bad. I've made some bad financial investments. I don't go back to have the record change and the stocks to go up or down. So I would like to urge you to view your task as that of regulators. Just as we Oregonians would not benefit from uncontrolled sales of investment securities, so we Oregonians will not benefit from uncontrolled property development under the guise of Measure 37. Please use your interests and your legislative responsibilities to address the interests of all Oregonians, not just certain groups. I'd like to point out, if I could, that I would like to put Measure 37 back to the voters because I think they would change it, just the same way as if we put the Iraq War back to the voters, they would not approve it, knowing what happened. Thousand Friends is my second choice.
Yeah, thank you very much. All right, our next panel is going to include Scott Ashcom, Liz Frankel, and Marilyn Watster. Okay. Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Scott Ashcom with the Oregon Agricultural Alliance, and actually One of the bills that is receiving a public hearing before you tonight is a bill which we ask to be introduced, and that would be House Bill 3153. But I will address my comments to the framework.
Okay.
We want to commend the committee for the progress that it's made with regard to the framework. We support the direction you're going wholeheartedly. Yeah, 3153 provides an excellent opportunity to insert the framework, on line 16 to 15 of page 1. Just delete the new language that Legislative Council has providentially provided for us there and insert the framework in its place. But the real meat of the bill is on page 2, lines 9 through 12. And here what we've done is suggested that that the committee add the right to farm laws of the state of Oregon and Oregon Department of Agriculture and Oregon Department of Forestry's plant and animal safety and health regulations into the existing exemption section of Measure 37. We think it would be a very beneficial use of that exemption section to resurrect the right to farm laws. The Attorney General for the Department of Agriculture, Richard Whitman, who you heard from last week, gave an opinion to the Department of Agriculture director near the end of the last legislative session that under Measure 37, the right to farm laws and Department of Agriculture animal plant safety health regulations, such as the regulations that deal with mad cow disease, brucellosis, hoof and mouth disease, spruce budworm infestations, gypsy moth infestations, and the like, could give rise to Measure 37 claims. A way to obviate that and prevent that would be simply to exempt the right to farm laws from Measure 37. So that's what we're asking for. We know that you now have possession and ownership of the bill that we've asked for, but we think that agriculture really needs the right to farm laws to be exempt from Measure 37. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you.
Good evening, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Peggy Lynch. I'm a representative of the League of Women Voters of Oregon, which is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages the informed and active participation of citizens in government in order to build better communities statewide, and we've certainly had that this evening. We provided written testimony to you in February before any proposals had come out regarding Measure 37 and the need for some action. We listed a set of issues that we believed required immediate action, and we have reviewed the outline of amendments that were recently received, and consistent with our February testimony, offer the following. We continue to ask the committee to recommend to the full legislature an immediate suspension or extension of Measure 37 processing. The financial risk to local governments, to the state, and to all Oregonians is too great to ignore. The clock is ticking for the large number of claims filed in the last weeks before the December 4th deadline, and you heard that from Art Schlack this evening. Next, we ask that the committee develop legislation to narrowly address the issues of clarity, consistency, and certainty. Clarify the ambiguous definitions surrounding the exemptions from Measure 37 claims that pertain to health and safety, such as you've just heard, as well as the federal exemption. Also clarify when those factors should not be addressed, or when they should be addressed at claim or at land use action. We don't find this issue addressed in the proposal before you. Clarify the judicial appeals process. We understand that a new process is being is a part of this process, but until we actually see the text of the amendments, we want to make sure that we get that on the table. This new proposal creates yet more ways to implement Measure 37, not less. So each new process creates new opportunities for new lawsuits. Clarify the issue of ownership, and I won't get into that as well, because more importantly, we want you to address the issue of transferability and the issue of prospective claims. Of great concern to the League is this proposal establishes a process for Measure 37 claims into the future. Last session, the Measure the legislature created a Big Look Task Force to consider changes to our current land use system. Changes recommended by that task force may well affect residential uses and farm and forest practices. This proposal hamstrings future planning efforts. We need you to provide consistency in claims processing statewide. We're pleased that this issue seems to be addressed, but until we see that that specific text, we aren't completely sure. In summary, we believe the proposal does not return certainty to the system, but instead creates more uncertainty. All parties deserve certainty related to their own property as well as to their neighbors' properties. Personal or business investments, and you've heard that this evening, may be curtailed without this certainty. Oregon needs to be able to change its land use system as circumstances change without the threat of claims or lawsuits. Thank you for hearing us.
All right, thank you. Carolyn?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Marilyn Walster, and I'm an urban dweller. I live just about a mile from here, if you consider Salem urban. There are people who would say that I don't have anything to do with Measure 37 because of where I live, and Measure 37 has been purported to be about fairness. I would say, too, we all know it's about money. And there's a piece of money that I've never heard anybody talk about at these hearings, and that's about $4.8 billion. Billion. I have a hard time even saying that. $4.8 billion that the urban and suburban residents, citizens of this state have put in for tax relief for agriculture areas and forest lands. And so in terms of your framework, I think that you're going, you know, in a direction that that takes into consideration that investment. We need to protect it. We can't give it away. We can't give it to the developers. And so, again, the framework, you know, to limit the housing, to limit the commercial interests, I really appreciate that. I would just say that, you know, nobody really likes the framework, and so therefore you're probably doing a good job. So thank you.
Thank you. Our last panel for the evening is going to be as follows: Henry Reeves, Susan Ruggles, and David Hart.
I'm David Hart. Why don't you call somebody else? I'll pass on this.
All right. Ron Whitlaw, if Ron's here.
Thank you, co-chairman and committee members. My name is Henry M. Reeves, and I live in Yamhill County. I have a problem here. I seem to have drawn number 37 as my admittance ticket. And I want
to. I have a problem too. Mike's 35. I'm going ahead of you.
Well, my question is this a door prize or is this a booby prize? Folks, you well know that you cannot address and solve a problem unless you understand what it is. And I am quite certain that we have yet to see the consequences of Measure 37. As I said, I live in Yamhill County, one of the highest application filing counties in the state. I'm very familiar with many, many of the applications, having sit in on county commissioner meetings. Let me say that in Yamhill County, our county government is in a state of denial. We were assured that Measure 37, assured by the county to the county commissioners, that this would not happen in developing subdivisions or things like that. Measure 37 might be two or three houses or something like that, quite innocuous. We have seen it all in Yamhill County, the problems that you've heard today. Let me say, in closing, we're just not talking about legislative things here. We have some major social issues that Measure 37 is creating. Things like this: neighbors being pitted against neighbors, friends being pitted against friends, family members even being pitted against other family members. We are only seeing the tip of the iceberg here. In your necessity to develop some short-term relations or solutions to problems that had deadlines and everything, please do not overlook the long-term consequences of the decisions that you make. Thank you.
Thank you. Susan?
My name is Susan Ruggles. I live in Yamhill County. Thank you for all of your hard work, and thank you for my opportunity to speak. As it is said that Chief Seattle once proclaimed, "I will fight no more forever," he lost his land. As I see it, land is a forever word that is intangible. Simplistically, I own a deed, not the land. Ownership is temporary. Land is perpetual. Oregon's land is in a forever situation, not unlike Chief Seattle's loss. Citizens of Oregon will lose if development continues under Measure 37's current language. Measure 37, as we all now recognize, was a sham, a bait-and-switch tactic using Little Mrs. English. However, I do agree that land use laws had swung too far, which put unrealistic constraints on situations portrayed by Mrs. English in the now infamous TV advertisement. But now lawmakers have an opportunity to bring some balance to Measure 37. Before the Oregon, as we know Oregon today, will be lost to development forever, changing Oregon's spectacular landscape, precious farmland, stands of timber, quaint towns, and yes, planned cities. Gone forever. I would like to see a repeal of any provision that will allow subdivisions, commercial strip centers, and big box development, industrial development, billboards, and airports. Chief Seattle lost, and so will all of us, unless Measure 37 is amended. Thank you.
Thank you. Ron?
Yes, thank you for having me here today. I'm going to vary from my original testimony because I was unaware of the framework, and my testimony is just about my claim on Measure 37. I don't understand, for one thing, I don't know what counties you people come from, but in my county, we cannot develop a piece of property and draw down the wells unless we can demonstrate that we will not do that.
Thank you.
I'm a little, and over 60% of Oregon land mass is now public use, not private. And the little bit of private property we have left, a lot of that is already regulated. I cannot build on my little 21.5 acres and my little 5-acre parcels that I want to develop unless I jump through hoops and bounds with all the restrictions that would be put on just developing those 5 acres, and I would not be able to put wells on them if I'm going to affect my neighbors. So, please, I just say to all of you on Measure 37, this was a referendum by the people. Don't mess with it. Leave it alone. The people have spoke. Thank you.
Thank you. That's going to conclude our testimony for this evening. I will be closing the public hearings on Senate Bill 588, Senate Bill 1019, House Bill 3153, and House Bill 3540. I also want to thank everyone for being here and being very cordial and listening to both sides of the issues, or multiple sides of the issue. Hope you'll have a safe evening, and thank you.